This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime.
Welcome to Place to Be Nation, Pops, Looking Forward, Looking Back, the show that takes a look at the worlds of pop culture and sports, as well as looking back at events and seasons of the past. Here is your host, Andy Atherton.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back. I am your host, Andy Atherton, and thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight, it is the wrap-up, the culmination of what started a few months ago. That's right. This is our look back at the summer movie season, as well as giving you guys the results of our oh-so-much-fun summer movie wager. But I'm not here, and I've got almost the entire band back together. Sadly, one of us was feeling under the weather, and we will give a shout-out to that person in a little bit. But first, let me introduce, he is the co-host over on the wrestling feed of the Place to Be podcast, co-host of the main event, my co-host on the Year in Pop, here on the Pop feed, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you tonight, my friend?
I was hoping to win this contest so you could get me a new mic, but I guess that's not going to work. I guess you'll just be buying us all cupcakes then, right?
Well, we haven't revealed Diabetic who the winner coma. Is, but that will come later in the show.
I've already been told publicly and privately that it wasn't me because I don't believe in children going to the movies, apparently. But in any event, it is an honor and a privilege to be here with you, sir. We're doing this one in honor of one of our team members. Tonight, but we'll get into that later. But good to be back.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Also joining us, he is a co-host on DC For You, a part of the Sarcastic Four over on the Marvelish podcast, and a co-host of 90 to Nothing, Mr. Russell Sellers. Russell, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing really well. Glad to be back to talk about my favorite movie time of the year, the summer movie season. And unfortunately, I didn't win this one either. I had a really great movie picked out. I was going to make you watch Slackers if I had won.
God. Where have I heard that before?
I don't know. It just came to me.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Dream.
Stranger things have happened. Also joining us, he is the co-host on the wrestling feed on Talking WCW. And here on the Pup feed, he is also one of the Sarcastic Four over on Marvel Age, as well as a co-host on Talking Pup, Mr. Tim Capel. Tim, how are you tonight, my friend?
Thank you, AA, for bringing us all back. I was eagerly anticipating Cupcake Fest 2019. So looking forward to getting into it here, diving in. Spoiler alert, I did not win the summer movie wager either. But
Tim just wants cupcakes anyway.
Funny enough, I wasn't going to pick Slackers for the film to watch. I think I was going to go in a different direction and do Hackers. So look forward to that.
Wow, kicking it old school.
I wonder if somebody would against sliders. I don't know. It sounds like a theme.
Yes.
Right. Eating sliders now, too?
Wow. Sliders are so good.
You had to go there.
No, we're going to binge watch the 90s TV show.
Ah.
Of the same name.
And then binge eat.
And then watch Harold and Kumar.
Right now.
We're going to binge watch sliders while eating sliders.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There you go. A right. Nice theme night right there.
And rounding out our group tonight, she is the co-host of Geek and Sassy, quite often a co-host on Pop Goes the Movies, Miss Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you, my friend?
With all this cupcake talk, I don't know how I am. Like, I just don't know. And I will just say, I really, really did not win. But if you've ever heard of Mr. Irrelevant, I am Mrs. Irrelevant, yes. And I deserve cupcakes and a parade.
Tremendous comparison. That's awesome.
Just saying.
And also who was going to join us, the other half of Geek and Sassy, the other half of Talk of Pop, the other half of a lot of other shows, Miss Jennifer Smith. But unfortunately, Jenny came down with a cold today, which prevented her from being on tonight. So a shout out to Jenny. Much love to her. We wish you could be here. We know you're here in spirit. And also, Jenny did not win. So,
pour one out for you, Jenny.
Such a dick host.
It takes one to know one.
We miss you so much, but you fucking lost.
She beat you.
That's rough.
You can hear her right now. Really, Andy? Fuck you, Andy.
Yeah. For shame.
Just what Jenny needs while she's already feeling ill.
Exactly.
Just give her a paper cut and pour lemon juice on it while I...
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right, so anyway, before we get to the results, though, of our summer movie wager, we're going to talk about this past summer, kind of go over, you know, the top movies grossed domestically and kind of give our thoughts on, like, you know, the summer on a whole. It seemed like sequels did not fare as well this year. So let's start with Russell. Give us some general thoughts on this summer's movie season.
You know, overall, it wasn't bad. It wasn't really all that great as far as, like, original creations go, but... To say that anyone other than Disney was the dominant force at the box office would just be naivete, because this was Disney's year. They owned the box office from the beginning of the summer all the way to the end, and they're probably going to own the fall too. So they are the unstoppable juggernaut. Even whenever they're producing something that's a bit on the mediocre side, it still manages to cross the billion-dollar mark. And that is just remarkable. But I guess maybe they're giving the people what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, I would say that I was pleased with pretty much everything of theirs that I watched, even if it wasn't necessarily setting my world on fire every single time. But they did have what I think was both the highest grossing movie of the summer and the best movie of the summer, and Avengers Endgame. So I don't really have any complaints, though it would have been nice to see a little bit more variety in the studio efforts. But, you know, you can't make these studios produce good movies. They either are going to or they're not. So it is what it is. And most of it was pretty good.
All right. Tim, what are your general thoughts on this past summer's movies?
You know, it was so funny to me that earlier in the summer you were hearing this narrative about how down the box office was compared to this same time in 2018, right? We're talking pretty early in the summer. And I just looked at that as... I don't know. I wonder how it got started. I think it may have something to do with, like, the year in general just kind of getting off on a bad foot. Like, winter of 2019 was pretty down and pretty bad compared to 2018. But it's like people are pretending there wasn't this little movie called Black Panther that came out last year in February that was a cultural phenomenon and was like the fourth highest grossing film of all time. And all of a sudden, because we didn't have another Black Panther, it's like, oh my God, the death of the industry now. People aren't going to movies anymore. What are we going to do? And at the end of the day, how did everything shake out? Well, I came armed with some numbers, as I like to do for these shows. And the summer 19, summer box office season, was indeed down compared to last summer. It was down a paltry 3%. So pretty much beneath comment, I think, and I hope that really puts that argument to rest. And I just think the reality is we're seeing more films spaced out where it's not – summers aren't as crowded maybe as they used to be, where every major studio is dumping all their major tentpole releases in the summer. Things are really spread out now. I mean – you look at Avengers Endgame, and it was, you know, eventually the highest grossing film worldwide of all time that came out this year. But according to some industry sources, it was more of a spring season movie, not even a summer movie. but for our purposes, we will be talking about it. I'm very, very excited for that. And all in all, yeah, pretty healthy summer box office season, Avengers Endgame or no. And a lot of great stuff that we can sink our teeth into here.
Yes. We'll get into that in just a few minutes. Miranda, what are your general thoughts on this summer movies?
Overall, I think I can agree, honestly, with a lot of what Russell said, because, you know, we talked heavily about, you know, Disney and what they're bringing forth. And if you go back and you review our list, it's pretty much Disney, 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 Disney. I was shocked, honestly, with just a couple at how high they went, even though, like, I ranked them that high as well, just from a parent perspective, because of all the backlash they were getting before the movie even started, basically with just like a quick preview. People were getting backlash over some of these. It was very much, in my opinion, a kid movie summer. Caden and I spent so much time at the theater this summer, which I really liked, but I don't know how many summers I can say that about in the past. So I kind of liked that, to be honest.
Yeah. Usually drives the ticket price, the box office, because, you know, it's multiple tickets on one viewing. Scott, what are your general thoughts on the summer movie season?
I think we've come to the realization, I think everyone has said it so far, that no media conglomerate has spent money more wisely than Mickey has. Otherwise what I call the rodent. Because I've always grown up with the philosophy that Winnie the Pooh is the face of Disney, not something that you kill with a trap. But anyway, but in its defense, it made amazing money by spending it wisely. It owns arguably the two of the most important movie franchises of all time. One ended in May. One will be ending in 3 months. That's where the unknown comes in, and that's why I'm looking forward to when we talk about the fall and winter. Well, or next summer, I should say, because the winter's pretty much locked in for the most part. But people could argue about – and I did it on our preview show. I bitched about, do we really need another Lion King? Do we really need another Aladdin? Do we really need another Mulan? You know, what's next? We're going to have another fucking Steamboat Willie? I mean, you know, do we have to remake every single thing they ever did? I mean, that will probably only go so far before people get tired of it.
Agreed.
But having said that, and I'm looking forward to diving into a few of those examples, it's made the money, and that's all that matters. And that's why we're all getting arguably the greatest streaming service in the history of the universe for $8 fucking dollars a month.
Yes. Oh, so. Actually, I have an update about the streaming service. So I am a Disney Movie Club member. Like, I don't know if any of you guys remember that or were ever a member of that.
But I'm also a D23 member.
Okay. So I think they offered the same deal or even a better deal for D23 members. Mm-hmm. But I found out today if you're in the Disney Movie Club, you can get 3 years for $160.
Wow. It was 3 years, $143 for D23.
Yeah, you guys got a little bit better of a deal than we did, but they're going
to I'm actually waiting for the bundle.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Expand that out to the whole public, that deal?
Yes.
Or is this a deal?
You could have signed up for like a free D23 membership to get that. I think that's what Justin did and a few other people. So I pay for it because I get this, like, you know, basically be a D23 member. You know, you get to go to these events, which I've never gone to, but you get this magazine 4 times a year, which the magazine alone is $15 a pop. Mm-hmm. And it's a big, it's glossy. It's pretty fucking cool. And also a lot of times you get these little gifts, like replicas or remakes of, like, you know, there was a time we were getting patches. Like, I have a Captain America patch. I have a pavilion patch from Epcot. These are all recreations. And we just got the 10th anniversary. We just got a nice pin set. Somehow they had some kind of computer glitch, and I have 2 memberships now, which I'm trying to fix. So I got 2 pin sets. So luckily that's enough that my kids won't fight over them. But yeah, I mean, if you're a Disney fan, it's worth it just because, you know, the magazine, and it's a keepsake and that kind of thing. And then sometimes you get a deal like this. It comes around on the run.
Yeah, I was pretty excited that I kept my Disney movie. You know, I get picked on for that because they're like, really? You're still getting those? But I'm like, heck yeah. And I'm glad I did because now I'm like, yes, 3 years locked in. Like, whoop, whoop.
Well, no, it's tremendous. And actually right now, if all of us want to do take our cupcakes and donuts and fly to the Netherlands, they already have it.
Yes,
that's right. They're beta testing it. Right?
They're beta test. So guess what? The Dutch or whatever they're called, the Norse, what are Netherlandians? The Amsterdamians are sitting in a dark room, imbibing and watching Iron Man.
Well, my husband is actually not far from the Netherlands, a different country, but he's in another country and he has a VPN. So now I'm curious.
Interesting.
Now I'm trying not to put too much stock in the reports coming out of this beta testing because we don't know how much variation there's going to be by region, by country for this service. So I'm hearing all this great stuff that's available to the Netherlands, and I'm like, reasonable to assume a good huge chunk of that will be making it stateside, but all of it, I don't know.
I've been trying to follow them pretty hardcore so that I can like talk about it on Geek and Sassy or post there. And I mean, what they're going to give us initially a lot is like a lot of like throwback old school stuff that I'm pretty excited about. So if nothing else, jumping out of the gate, we have like a lot of older things. I'm okay with that too, you know?
Plus it is what people expect, yeah.
Yeah, plus the entire Simpsons.
Old Yeller. Where the red fern grows. Come on.
Yeah, we're going to get all
Bedknobs
those.
And Broomsticks.
Oh, my God, I love that movie. That movie is – but you don't realize how fucking long that movie is.
The Rescuers, so we could try to pause and find the naked woman in
on the tits, window. Yeah.
Like flying tits.
Oh, my God.
Sounds like a game they're playing in the Netherlands right now.
Flying tits.
Oh,
flying tits. Anyway, so what I was saying was, and Miranda's exactly right. And so, I mean, Disney is the bee's knees right now. I mean, they're the cock of the walk. And
they
know it, exactly. But that's the best part. But one thing you got to give Disney credit for, they're paying it forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, guys, $8 a month for literally everything they fucking own. So, I mean, you can't go wrong. They nothing's expensive because they own it all. So sometimes monopolies work. Getting back on track, it was a great summer. It was a better summer than people thought. I did not win because I overestimated movies for grown-ups, apparently, and underestimated fucking little brats in there. No, I'm only kidding.
Get off my lawn, you kids.
Get off my lawn, you stupid kid. Go see your stupid yellow mouse or whatever that dumb movie is.
Oh, my God. No, I have a kid that's the get off my lawn kid, so.
That's the greatest kid ever. No, I mean Disney dominated, and they're going to dominate again this because they had the anchor movie of the summer, and they own the anchor movie of the winter.
They have two. When we talk about this winter.
Two.
When we get to next summer, things will be a little different. A little different.
Yes.
For a lot of franchises, because I mean, one major franchise will have a movie coming out next summer, and I was telling Andy about it today. I'm pumped about talking about that at the end of the show, but they are getting into the unknown. So Disney does have to think about that. But for this summer, I mean, I think people were tolerable of the remakes. I don't know how far they'll go with that, but they were tolerable of it this year. And again, we'll talk about all of them. But yeah, the mouse ruled. They owned it. They owned every big screen this summer, and they earned it.
All right, Tim, give us some of your big surprises of the summer.
Oddly enough, I think one of my bigger surprises was how well Aladdin did.
Yes.
I don't know. It seemed like there were if there's such a thing as anti-buzz around that, where it was just all you saw were just these memes with Will Smith as the genie, and they looked so bad, and no one was really talking about it. And meanwhile, you've got The Lion King on the heels of that, which everyone was apparently really looking forward to and showed up for, but gosh, they certainly didn't let Aladdin down either. I had that pretty low on my list and thought, you know, at the time that seemed appropriate based on just all the sort of pre-press around that film. And it wasn't super well received, but it made a lot of money. So, I mean, I personally didn't see it. You guys could maybe speak to it better than I did. But that was one that I think exceeded my expectations. Along similar lines, John Wick Parabellum, which I didn't have listed at all, and I think kind of took even the studios by storm.
Yeah.
For that to even crack the top 10, maybe I was a little bit pessimistic on the outlook at that. It could be like a sort of bottom of the list performer, but it was up there. I mean, it had a decent take, and I guess I didn't realize the strength of the built-in audience for that now franchise. I think we have to consider it, and yeah, interested to see where that goes from here.
The Keanu Sans.
Did you guys see my meme about somebody jumping into the future, and it's like, who's the president? And they're like, Keanu Reeves, and they're like, I'm staying here.
Oh man, that's like the apotheosis of Keanu Sans right there.
Right, I was like, I am here for this.
Let's see what else. Dark Phoenix, I felt like was going to do pretty bad, but sub 100 million bad, like way sub 100 million bad. That I think has to be regarded as a historical bomb.
Yes.
I mean, disastrous, which I'm sure we'll talk more about in a second.
It was the flare flop of the summer.
There you go. That's
drizzling shit. Yeah, the flare flop off the tallest ladder in the world through three flaming tables on thumbtacks. It was disastrous. Secret Life.
I can't wait for New Mutants.
If it ever comes out.
No wonder. You know what? No wonder that summer box office was so down. If only we'd gotten New Mutants.
Right.
Or if we got another certain movie, which we won't talk about right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
The Leprechauns.
So speaking of anthropomorphic animals, which I don't even know if describes Artemis Fowl still, you had the Secret Life of Pets too, which I had, I think, kind of higher than it maybe deserved. I don't know. It certainly did not do as well as its predecessor. And I think maybe that might have just been bad placement by the studio. I don't know why they dropped this in the summer. Wasn't the other one more like a fall, winter type movie?
I think it was like a winter,
I have to
spring.
Look it up. I can't remember. I remember buying it when it came out on DVD for him for Christmas. So maybe not.
I think it was maybe the Louis C.K. factor.
The Louis C.K. of it all may not have helped. I don't know.
He really phoned that performance in.
So anyway, that's probably my overall assessment of winners and losers for the summer.
Miranda, what about you? What are some of your big surprises from this summer?
I wasn't surprised that the kiddo movies, so to speak, got as high as they did. I was too, like the Aladdin thing. I think I heard all of us go, uh-huh. That one shocked me because of, like Tim said, like everything you heard leading up to it, there was so much backlash. And then it actually turned out to be really good. So there was that. So I was kind of surprised about that. And then Secret Life of Pets 2, actually, we ended up not even going to see it.
Looking at it now,
we're like, just wait till it comes on DVD. Like, if sitting at home, he'll enjoy it. But otherwise, like, And then there was another.
158 million, Secret Life of Pets 2. Secret Life of Pets, which was a summer movie in 2016, it looks like 368 million. Oof. So, wide gap between those two, even though they were indeed both summer movies.
Mm-hmm. It was also a movie that, number one, you could have done a two, but you didn't have to do a two, if that makes,
sure.
They set it up where you could have done either way. So maybe the kids that were super, super interested in it then, like mine, they're old enough now where they're like, and then the younger kids are like, talking pets, we got Paw Patrol, who gives a fuck? Like, you know, like, we see that all the time. Like, we don't give a shit. So I don't know. But I did hear from other parents, like, don't really spend your time on it. I think I was shocked because I expected John Wick to go higher than
it did. Yes, you did.
I really did. Yes. No, I really did because of all the hype, again, before it, leading up to it, and everybody's like, oh, my God, I love this franchise. I love this movie. So when it didn't happen, I was like, huh, okay. But then, you know, sometimes you, even as badass as Keanu Reeves is, you'd, maybe number three is not really needed.
I don't know. I've only seen the first one, but I heard that this franchise just keeps getting better.
Well, it does.
I don't know. I heard great things about it, but that's why I kind of was surprised. The hype leading up and then the hype after, but then the numbers aren't there. So I don't know.
I didn't know there was any hype.
That much better?
Well, I think, it stood out. There was no real big. I mean, as much as you would, Hobbs and Shaw is like an action movie, but that's like, that's for like, you know, my kids' age. Like, we'll see Hobbs and Shaw. John Wick is like for like grown ups. This is grown up action.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is like, you know, no, I wouldn't bring my kids to John Wick. You know?
Right.
Maybe
right.
My daughter, because she's 17, but my son, definitely not. Scott, what are some of your big surprises?
That families of seven-year-olds didn't go see John Wick, which is why it didn't finish number three.
And those same families didn't go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, you got to educate your children. Seeing a bunch of anthropomorphic animals is not real life, normally. Biggest surprise. I'm gonna say, I know I was like being funny about it, but this is a dead serious statement here. I did not think Detective Pikachu was gonna do that well. I thought Pokemon was dead. I'm sorry. I thought the app was stupid, and I thought it was gonna flame out, and this was an idiotic idea, and I was wrong. I mean, ninth isn't great. It's not like third.
I love hearing Scott say I was wrong. The best sound in the world.
It is still stupid, but and I'm not wrong about that. But
it's debatable.
It's a yellow fucking mouse. But anyway, it did very well. I just didn't think it would do that well.
And it actually underperformed, though, per what some analysts had said.
But that surprised me. That's pretty much it in terms of surprises. I mean, we'll get disappointed. I mean, surprised that something didn't do well is more of a disappointment. I know you'll get to that next, so I won't get into that. But that's probably my only surprise. It's probably why I was so irritatingly infuriated about it, because I really didn't expect it to do as well as it did. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, some of my other I have more disappointments than surprises, mostly because of booking dates and such of when movies came out, I think hurt them. But yeah, I have to put my neck on the chopping block. I was not ready for how good Detective Pikachu was going to do. And ninth, they should be happy with nine. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So. Considering
think they're not happy.
No.
No.
We're also talking about domestic. I mean, I didn't really look at the worldwide numbers, and I'm sure it did fairly well overseas.
Because
it translates, you know, well. It's from Japan, so, I mean, I'm sure.
It was also a movie that opened like 2 weeks after Endgame.
Yeah.
Which,
right.
That's, yep. I mean, nobody envies that.
Well, it was like Mother's Day weekend, because Caden and I went, because he was like, well, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to see Detective Pikachu. Yeah. And at first he was like, okay. And then he loved it. So I think it's, you know, 2 weekends after Endgame, it was Mother's Day. Like, I don't know. There was a lot there that, like, maybe it could have done even better. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, something had to open that weekend, and I guess this is as good, air quotes, as anything else.
Well, I had a great Mother's Day, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just... in terms of the money, I didn't see
that.
Oh,
no, for sure.
Just, I mean, I don't know how... I don't know what industry sources were saying it would have done, but it just seems like maybe they were a little hopeful, unrealistically hopeful for its performance after, you know, 2 weekends of the juggernaut of Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, I mean, I went to see it with my kids too. I mean, and thankfully, I played Pokemon Go with them, so I actually knew some of the characters, or else I would have been lost. At all. I'm like, what the hell? Why does this thing have a skull on its head? What's happening here?
I can hear people like gasping around me, like, what the fuck?
That's really funny.
Russell, what are some of your big surprises?
Like has been said already, Aladdin was one that I wasn't necessarily expecting to do as well as it did, considering it was like no matter what kind of friend I was talking to, as far as their feelings on such things was concerned, Aladdin didn't seem like a very popular movie amongst anyone, but somebody went to see this movie because it also cracked the billion-dollar mark. John Wick 3 was one that I anticipated doing pretty well. I didn't actually think it was going to do as well as it did. It opened with the franchise high because, you know, usually whenever you have a movie like this, especially an action franchise that's going into its third and now going on a fourth film, there's usually the law of diminishing returns on these kinds of movies. John Wick is the inverse of that. It makes more money per movie. The first one had a lifetime gross, domestically anyway, of like $43 million. John Wick Chapter 2 made over $92 million domestically, and now Chapter 3 just clocked in at $171 million. So John Wick is just the franchise that won't quit, and also, yes, each of these movies gets better. They've really got a winner of a franchise there. I think the as far as like Detective Pikachu goes, it performed a little under where I kind of expected it to be. I thought it was going to put up some pretty big numbers, but as Tim pointed out, it did have the unfortunate position of being that soon after Endgame, and people were still riding that wave pretty hard. So it had some competition. It had stiff competition to get over. As far as underperformers, though, I'm actually pretty surprised that Hobbs and Shaw didn't do better. I thought the trailers looked really good. The Rock is a very bankable star. He and Jason Statham together are really good. Idris Elba seems like he would be a huge box office draw as well. And while the movie did finally start to really make some money once it opened in China, it's still odd that it didn't do better here at home, considering how much money the last couple of Fast and Furious movies have made, both of them like cracking the billion-dollar mark. So a little surprising there, I would say. And maybe the only other underperformer surprise I had was I was expecting Rocket Man to do a little bit better, considering how good some of the performances are in that movie. But I guess the Elton John biopic audience ain't quite there right now. But that's about it. Everybody else kind of performed about where I expected them to, with, of course, Godzilla going down in a big ball of blue flame, and Men in Black International stumbling and falling on its face right out the gate because nobody really wanted that franchise to come back.
I did.
One person wanted that franchise to come back. One person went to see that movie.
Two, because we did a Pop Goes the Movies.
Yeah, and I took Kaden and Jerry, so yeah, four.
Well, yeah, I took my kids, so six.
Six! See? We're moving on up.
So two people wanted to see that movie, and they drug along others.
All right. Now we kind of mixed in the disappointments, but any other big disappointments that we haven't touched on?
I want to back Russell up on Hobbs and Shaw because I'm looking at it compared to the rest of the entries in that franchise. And I know it's a spinoff, but I mean, it's still part of the Fast universe. I don't know what to call it. And I mean, the last movie to do worse domestically than Hobbs and Shaw was Fast and Furious from 2009. And Hobbs and Shaw trails the other films in this series by quite a bit. It made $168 million domestically. Gosh, the last one from 2017, Fate of the Furious, did 226 million. Wow. So,
yikes. But, Mommy, what day did Hobbs and Shaw come out?
That was August.
Yeah. Early August, first weekend of August.
Yeah, because I saw it on vacation. I don't know. Yeah.
Just a speculation, but like I know down here where we live, like the kids were already going back to school, so I know parents were like back to school shopping and spending all the money on that, and like they're the parents are the ones that would go to this, and then they're also taking like their last minute vacations because school is about to start. So I'm wondering if that had any effect on it, because like I didn't get to go and I really wanted to go. So I'm just wondering if things like that, especially when you have summer movies like the ones that pop out at the very beginning when they're like, let's get this started, you know, or versus the ones at the very end where they're out of money, they're exhausted, they now have to do all this back to school shopping, or they've got to go back to work, or whatever it may be. Like, that has to affect it.
There may be something to that, because all of the other films in the series were April, May, June. Mm-hmm. And this was not until August. So
I remember the very first one came out in June, and I only remember that because I went to see it the day before I graduated high school.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, so that could be. And of course, the thing that'll really tell us is when the next Fast and Furious movie comes out, because that is a thing that's going to happen, unfortunately, for the rest of us. But,
like I think summer.
If it comes out and makes like stupid money, like the last couple in that franchise have, then I think we can maybe chalk it up to, both placement and maybe level of interest in spinoffs. But we'll see if the interest level is still there for more Fast and Furious when the next one actually drops.
Yeah. And then Vin Diesel could, like, give The Rock a big finger if it if it does better.
Sure. God, yeah. God, I that's one feud that I'm firmly Team Rock on.
What?
He's firmly.
I don't know. Vin Diesel plays D&D. This is a hard choice.
And he's
now, what about
The
Tyrese?
Rock is a good human being.
What about Tyrese against all of his co-stars?
Well,
whichever
side largely The Rock, but everyone seems to be pissed at him right now.
Like, I would pay good money to watch The Rock give Tyrese the people's elbow like six or seven times in a row. just hit him with the rock bottom like off of something very tall. That would be awesome.
Only if he does the eyebrow first.
All right.
I mean, this may be a franchise in decline. Furious 7, 2015, I hate to say it, but feels like it kind of got the death bump, you know, with Paul. There was increased curiosity and interest in that. And
I think it absolutely did. I think it only crossed that $1 billion mark because of the tragedy that was associated with the movie.
Yeah. And then, again, that most recent installment, The Fate of the Furious, did rather significantly less than Furious 7 and even less than Furious 6. So...
Well, I think this franchise has gone up and down. Like it was doing okay, and then it went down when Vin Diesel like left for like whatever movie, and then once The Rock shows up, it shoots back up.
Tokyo.
Yeah, and then yeah. So
all right. Yeah, I can give the creatives behind it a lot of credit for morphing their franchise to no longer be about, you know, rebel street racers and actually turning it into an international kind of espionage / just action adventure film. Like that's a pretty brilliant move on their part to change their franchise into something completely different. But I feel like we are finally maybe reaching fast fatigue. I think people may have finally had enough, and they're going to vote with their dollars. And if I were to make a bold prediction, as it were, I don't think the next Fast and Furious movie does very well.
I'm just saying, if you count Hobbs and Shaw, we're at like what, 8 total?
No, Hobbs and Shaw is 9.
9? So at what point do you decide like there's enough? Like,
when they stop making money, that's what's going to happen.
When 90% of the dialogue is family, family, family.
It's no longer you even saying anything.
It's about family. Yes, we get it, Vin. We know. We're done. We're done listening to this. That's all this movie franchise has to say is an emphasis on family. And I'm like, well, okay.
Well, you know, that helps him perfect his line delivery of "I am Groot."
It does. It's the only way he gets to really flex those muscles, such as they are. Oh, nice. But
I like Vin Diesel. I'm not trying to make fun of him. I see your point definitely. And I'm wondering. So that third movie is where they did Tokyo Drift, apparently. So we're doing, I guess, illegal drift racing in Tokyo. So is going to Tokyo in your drift racing series of films like the equivalent of going to space for your horror franchise?
Cool. I like that analogy there.
Because you get Hellraiser in space, whichever that one was. Well, and
didn't it take 10 movies, well, Scott, to go into space in Jason and Friday the 13th?
Jason X.
Yeah, one took a while. That one took a while to get to space.
Wait, I missed a Jason movie that went to space?
There was a 2001. Great, there was a great kill with cryogenics or whatever, dry ice or some
shit.
Yeah, he dried her face.
Yeah, that was a cool kill.
Like nitroglycerin or something.
Yeah, he turned into Wolverine Jason with like adamantium outside his body.
How did I miss this?
This was like 2002.
I know.
Well, if I had won the contest, Miranda, I'd have picked it.
Oh God.
So there you go.
Well, you know what?
Leprechaun
went to space.
Oh, you guys are going to regret making fun of that movie eventually.
The Leprechaun went to space in the fourth one, I think.
Before he went to the ghetto or the hood or whatever.
Leprechaun in the hood, yeah.
Oh, my God.
The fourth one was space. Coming out.
The fourth one was space, yeah.
Right. I mean, it's only a matter of time before Fast and Furious goes to space.
Well, they went to Tokyo. That's their version.
That's close enough. They're going to actually go to space. I mean, hell, James Bond went into space.
And that was back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Perfected it.
All right. Scott, any other disappointments this summer?
Yes. The big disappointment for me, I'm partially to blame because I didn't get to see it, but I'm very surprised that Godzilla King of the Monsters did not do better. The first two were awesome. I actually just watched the first Godzilla on my Blu-ray last week, and I thought it was awesome. And I love Kong Skull Island. Kong Skull Island is probably one of my like 15 favorite movies ever. So, and I'm looking at the schedule, and it came out. There wasn't really anything around it. It wasn't even close to Endgame, so we can't even use that. John Wick 3 had been out for a few weeks. The weekend that came out was also Rocket Man and Ma, which isn't really, you know, earth-shattering films. I mean, Dark Phoenix came out the following week. Like, that fucking matters. So I was surprised. It had its own stage, and for some reason just didn't catch. You know?
Yeah.
That one surprises me. Like, I don't think it's going to affect the franchise. I still think we're going to see Godzilla versus King Kong, and I think the universe will continue because it does have its audience. But I was expecting more fiscally out of that than it did.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little disappointing, but you know, that was a big surprise that you know that didn't finish in the top 10. All right, so let's go through said top 10. We're gonna start number one. Everybody had it. Everybody knew it. You were a fool if you didn't have it number one on your list. Avengers Endgame. Lots have been said on a lot of great shows here on the Placement Nation. But yes. Yes. But does anybody have any final thoughts as we close the book on Endgame? It just got announced, actually, I think Friday by Kevin Feige about the big set coming out before Christmas of the entire first, all the 22 or 23 movies.
The Infinity Saga.
The whole Infinity Saga coming out on a whole thing. And they released that alternate Sam Jackson where you mentioned Spider-Man and mutants a lost scene or from the post-credits scene in Iron Man. So anybody have some final thoughts on Endgame?
I'm just trying to remember. remember, didn't we talk about last time, like, how if they brought them all back, we would prefer, like, it had needed to have some, like, sort of gauntlet thing with it for us to – somebody brought that up.
Oh, if they did a set, you want to
Yeah, they need
have
a
like
set a, with, like, a gauntlet.
Well,
gauntlet,
they haven't – yeah, they haven't decided what the packaging is going to look like yet.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think I said that. No, I think I said that. That they should do one with all – well, if you count Spider-Man, what is it, 24?
23.
That includes Spider-Man? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so. 23. Just a 23-movie set. It'll be built like the Bond 50. It'll just have three of those, like, books with the slips in them, and it'll just be phase one, phase two, phase three. And if the glove comes with it, I mean, the thing will be fucking $600 or some nonsense.
Oh, but, for sure. But it was pretty cool. It was a really cool idea.
Oh, it's a tremendous idea. I agree
100%. I was like, heck yeah.
And they'll do it. Oh, they'll do it. They don't give a fuck. And somebody will buy it. People will buy it. So
they'll sell it at like D23, where Andy and I hope to one day go.
Yes.
There you go.
And, 2 years from now, it is an excellent.
Yeah.
I think all of us, clearly all of us knew this movie was going to put up huge numbers. Number one worldwide, all time numbers. Don't know that a lot of us saw that coming, but at the same time, is it too surprising, really? Avatar was able to hang on to that spot for a good almost 10 years. Something had to come along and dethrone it. I think it was kind of a dream come true for a lot of us here that something like Avengers Endgame could claim that crown. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how long it holds it. I don't know. I'm looking at the end of the year, and you know, you've got another little phenomenon coming along. Of course, I'm alluding to Cats.
So that is the stuff of nightmares, that fucking movie.
That's funny.
Holy shit.
And come out again? Oh, we know when it's coming out.
And Avatar, of course, is underneath the Mouse House now.
Yes.
So for those sequels that are never going to come out, they'll have those too.
I loved it. I can actually say I only saw it once in theaters. So, I mean, not for wanting to see it again, just didn't really get out to the theaters to make a repeat viewing of something that just had so many other options this summer. So, yeah, I might be looking into that gift set around this holiday season. So, well, gift for myself.
I did see it twice, I spent, like, I guess, like, the first however long of the movie just, you know, watching, half paying attention. I really just went for the last 40 minutes. That's really, I just wanted to see it on the big screen, that whole big, you know, awesome, epic battle. I had to see it one more time on the big screen. Like, this time, like, you know, kind of prepare myself, like, what I'm going to see, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it is an oddly structured film where it's not really much in the way of action until that last 40 minutes when they do go all out. So it's unlike other entries in this franchise, but I think all the better for it. So, but anyway, I think enough said on Avengers Endgame for me.
All right. It was quite the achievement by the Russo brothers. All right. So moving on to number two, The Lion King. Now I saw it. Russell saw it and Scott saw it. Scott, what'd you think of The Lion King? Do you think it deserved to come in number two? Like, it earned its spot?
Yes. Yeah, no, yes, it did. And I remember on the preview being skeptical because of the same argument we were saying, why does Disney have to touch something that's already perfect? The only things that are different is the fact that one is animated, one is CGI, and voices have changed. Actors have played in different roles. But I got to tell you, and not to jab at the 94 film whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I will probably buy the Blu-ray when they – because you know for a fact they're going to do a two-pack and have both in the
same
set.
They're doing
it
with Aladdin, from what I understand.
Yeah, so if they're going to do it for Aladdin, they're definitely doing it for Lion King, and I'm going to get it because – it was a great achievement. I mean, the music was still great. I think I liked Timon and Pumbaa better in the other one, in the 94 one, but, that was the only one. Everybody else, I mean, Jeremy Irons, Scar was probably a little bit better, but everybody else was just amazing. it definitely deserved its spot. I think I of course did not, we all know what I picked number two, but that's because I just don't understand the demographics of children. But I think that this definitely, and then I saw it and I'm like, yeah, this thing kicked ass. Do I still say that it needed to be made? Nah, probably not. But I'm not upset that it was, nor that it succeeded and lifted its expectations. I think of all the Disney remakes or reboots or refixes, whatever you want to define it as,
reboot quills.
I like that.
Reboot quills. Requels. This was the best one of the year. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Far better than Dumbo. Now I gave my thoughts on Pop Goes the Movies, but I kind of liked Aladdin a little more. I had some issues with this. I was not a fan of Billy Eichner, his performance. Timon and Pumbaa are always to me going to be Ernie Sabella. Ernie Ladd. I know,
Nathan Lane.
You know what? I had Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella mixed up in my head. So Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella, those are Timon and Pumbaa. I didn't like the whole dung thing with the fur. I had some little nitpicks of it. I guess the difference is with Aladdin, I went in with low expectations. And with The Lion King, I had very high expectations because of all the hype. And also it's Jon Favreau. The guy loves, you know, technology and playing in a sandbox. He's a you know, filmmaker like that. That's not afraid to take chances. But you know, I did enjoy the movie. Russell,
I have a question.
Okay, Tim,
about The Lion King. Well, Russell can answer this also. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. Question about how faithful the film is. Does it still spell sex in the sky with dust particles when it plops down?
Not only does it not do that, it also cuts out the brief and very funny song between Zazu and Scar. The one where Scar even picks up a hollowed out or a skull of something or another, maybe a gazelle, and starts working it like a puppet.
Yes.
That's
a lovely bunch of coconuts, Delidi.
That scene is not in the live action version.
Me Mr. Pig.
That scene was a bit changed. Now I will say this though: Timon and Pumbaa steal the movie for me in the new one. I actually really liked both of them; thought they were funny as hell. But where. Me and my girlfriend Elizabeth saw this movie together, and we both really liked it. We were like, you know, technologically speaking, from a visual standpoint, this is one of the most impressive things that either of us had ever seen. It was jaw-dropping just how good the CGI is on this movie. The voice acting performances are there. I think that by comparison to the 94 version, I believe it was 94 when the animated one came out. Yeah. Reasonably close. There are a couple that maybe aren't quite as moving or powerful as maybe they could have been. Jeremy Irons is still the better Scar to me. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't put our finger on why this movie wasn't really connecting as much with us as the animated version, and then it became very obvious. When you're animating the hand-drawn animation style, you can do a lot of very expressive things with characters' faces because it's not meant to be realistic so much. It's meant to be a cartoon. It's meant to be these animated very human-like characters anyway, or like you're giving human-like characteristics to animals. In this Jon Favreau CGI version, they wanted to make animals look as realistic and move and act as realistic like animals as they could. But when you do that, you take away all of the facial expressions. You take away the emoting and all of those things that you see in the characters' facial expressions. So connecting with those characters actually becomes harder because you're not seeing those things portrayed on screen. And I think that's why Lion King, while really good, like it's presented in a very good way, just it lacked something important. And I think that it was that tiny element that makes so much of a difference in the in this movie's presentation that it didn't connect as well with either of us as maybe it could have.
Yes. That was also, I had that feeling too. And, you know, I mean, you don't get Nala's DTF look also when she gives Simba in the animated movie. So, at number three was Toy Story 4. Now, this was probably where the most back and forth probably went between everybody who made picks, was between putting Lion King at 2 or Lion King at 3 and Toy Story flip-flop. And in the end, you know, my decision was mostly based on that Lion King, I think, had more curiosity to it. Toy Story was like, this is, you know, people were kind of like, we got another one? 3 was such a nice conclusion. Not taking anything away from Toy Story 4, but Lion King, I think, just had like a bigger, you know, there's not a lot of things that's bigger than Toy Story in terms of franchises under the mouse. Lion King is one of them. So, Miranda, Toy Story 4. Now, we spoke about this earlier, but give some general thoughts.
We did, and you and I did a pretty long podcast about it, too, if anybody didn't catch that, kind of our in-depth reviews of it. Honestly, I was more here for and more excited for Toy Story than I was The Lion King. I actually didn't get to see The Lion King in theater. It just didn't work out. And I was a little bummed, but now I'm like, even as well as everybody said it did, I'm okay with that. Like, I'll watch it as soon as I can. Toy Story, there was no way I was going to miss it. It was really good. And I had even said that it didn't have to be done. But I felt that it was done in such a manner that it was very important, and I was glad it was created and it was brought in. Because it was kind of almost like a different chapter. You know, it's explaining a different chapter of life, like Woody, not only the child moving on, but Woody moving on. And I think, like, as adults, because maybe some of us grew up with Toy Story, or, you know, some of us watched it, you know, even when you were like in college, that's still an age where you're trying to figure out who you are and what you want, you know? So I think it's also kind of a metaphor for the group of us that brought this into fruition, that we're now like moving forward and moving on. And I really liked that correlation. And I kind of hope they do stop. Like, I think I said that when we recorded, like, I think we're good, but apparently there's a Forky show that's going to come to Disney Plus from this. And that could be funny. Like, that could be really funny.
I'm down with them living on, but in little TV specials or shorts.
Right.
Like, we don't need a full-fledged Toy Story anymore. I think we're good. They've not to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but, you know, they've kind of split them off a little bit into, you know, their own little, you know, new adventures, or the adventures ahead are different for different characters. So I'm down for that. I'm down for more stories, but they just don't have to be a big story. Just give me Ducky and Bunny, you know, trying to do something one day. Give me Forky, you know, trying to do something. Give me, you know, Duke Kaboom, you know, give me a short with him. I'm cool, man. I'll gladly watch that for 5 to 8 minutes or whatever, or a holiday special, and I'm good.
And they've done good with the holiday specials in the past.
Yeah, they've had like 2 or 3.
The Halloween one is one of the funniest. Like, that is hysterical if you've never seen it. Without commercials and stuff, I think it's like 20, 22 minutes long. It's not long at all. It's hysterical. But I think it was needed, and not to be like all like deep, but I mean, I really do think separating people off, it showed like that's what happens. You grow up, you separate from people, you go on your own adventures, you become your own person. You have to decide that you're going to do your own thing. Like, I thought it did that as well, like very well. And I was surprised because everybody knows like, Miranda cries in most all movies to some extent. I got made fun of because I cried at Deadpool 2. I had reasons. And actually, I thought I made it like all the way through Toy Story and was like, I'm not going to cry. Hell yeah. And then I cried.
That ending will get you.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the ending. It was the little girl when she lost.
Yeah.
Stab me in the heart. God. Now, the ending was like, but that, like, that moment, for some reason, like, really hit me. Like, ooh.
Russell, you also saw Toy Story 4. What are some of your thoughts on where it landed in the summer and just on the movie in general?
Going into it, I had a lot of the same feelings that you mentioned before about 3 seeing like just the perfect ending to the franchise. Did we really need a fourth one? How is this even going to work? But I gotta say, this is one of those rare instances where a sequel fully justifies its existence as it goes along and shows that there actually really was a little bit of story left to tell here that they saved for this movie. And it was done beautifully. What I appreciated most, I think, about the movie was something that some people may criticize it for, but most of the characters in the movie, most of the supporting cast, or even some characters who have been main characters like Buzz Lightyear, he's really barely in the movie. Mm-hmm. He's there, but he doesn't have much of a role because this movie is all about Woody and Bo Peep. This is their movie. This is their story. This is how their story comes to its conclusion. And this was beautifully done. It's amazingly written, and the vocal performance from Tom Hanks was right on. I mean, he's always good, but he really brought it in this one. This movie will really grab those heartstrings and just start trying to play music with them. Because it's going to pull them in ways that you didn't know were possible, or especially with this movie, you might not have thought it was possible to do it anymore. But as me and Elizabeth were watching it, we were like, wow, just really struck by all this. But then one other thing hit me, that this movie is low-key for someone like Tim Capel, because if Forky isn't an exercise in body horror, I don't know what is.
Looks like I've been on the sidelines here, missed out on this one.
For the first half or better of this movie, once Forky is introduced, it's body horror. He is absolutely mortified by his own existence.
Relatable.
I'm trash.
He calls himself
hard same.
Yes, it is not something I expected to be in this movie. I did not expect them to go there with a franchise that is just so kid friendly. But watching that, I was just in tears laughing at it. So,
I'll just be in tears.
Tim might be in tears, but I did think of you, Tim, while I was watching the movie. I was not because Forky refers to himself as trash, but just because of your body horror fandom.
Yes.
Well, that's why I was laughing, is because Forky kept referring to himself as trash and throwing himself in the trash can. I was like, this poor thing.
Don't you just want to do that some days, though? I mean,
yes. Yeah, I'm like, let's just go, Lewis.
Literally does it.
You're a hot mess. Just like,
It's like, just let me go, for God's sake. I don't want to be this anymore. I was like, is this movie low-key about suicide?
Right?
Disney Plus on day one. And if they don't, I guess they'll get my money somehow or another.
Yeah, because this beautiful ending, one that – yeah, I expected them to go for the ultra mega happy ending, but they really flipped it on me and gave us an ending that just worked, I think, so much better. This felt like a real, true end to the Toy Story franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with the stuff that's coming up later, it's going to feel more like you said, spinoff. It's focusing more on the new characters, other than all the ones who have been in the franchise since 1995. Mm-hmm. So this was really great. Toy Story 4 was one of those just beautiful moments of cinema that I saw this summer.
Mm. Scott, any plans to see this when it's out on home video? Scott.
He died.
He's like, I can't take this kid shit. Enough of this stuff already.
Fuck all y'all, you kid.
Fuck you, people.
He threw himself in the trash.
He's trash. Well, when Scott either unmutes, gets back from the can or whatever, we'll go back to him. Spider-Man Far From Home. Now, Tim, you actually saw this movie in the theater.
I did. So I saw a movie,
so
guys.
So why don't we start with you, your general thoughts and...
Yeah, I think as expected, it rode that wave from Avengers Endgame. Did while I think it's a great movie and deserved all the money that it made, I think it made probably more than it would have just had it been released in a vacuum. You know, not that it's even super connected to the rest of the series, but it definitely feels like something that is following in the wake of this big event. You know, I mean, right down to the plot of the movie, which is Peter Parker now trying to find some way to carry on and, you know, be a good champion of Tony Stark's legacy, effectively. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know, the classic Spider-Man struggle of balancing that with his school life, his personal life, all that great stuff. So, while I think that cosmetically these Spider-Man films that are part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe are very different in terms of their setup, the details are different, a lot of the characters are different, various different reasons for that, the spirit of Spider-Man, Peter Parker Spider-Man, because as we know, we have multiple choices for a Spider-Man today, is really there. And I don't know. It's sort of inevitable to talk about, you know, the recent events surrounding this character and this property, this license, you could call it. What is that going to look like? I don't know. I will say I thought it was an interesting choice ending this the way that they did, with kind of a pretty big cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. And the more I thought about it, the more I start to think that it felt a little bit like Marvel being, I don't know, strategic in terms of their creative output. Because now if they can't make another Spider-Man movie, ultimately, as reports would lead us to believe, Sony is now kind of left holding that bag where they're like, do we really want to do this, you know, identity reveal thing? And if we don't, then how do we put that back in the bag?
Reboot!
I mean, yeah. I mean, if they think they can do that, then I think that they would be playing directly into Marvel's hands. So they almost have to tackle it and address it head on. Certainly, they're not going to cut ties with Tom Holland. They've got him signed to another picture anyway. I take that to mean they have to pay him regardless, so they'd be quite foolish not to bring him back, especially given how popular he is. So, I mean, do they just try to retcon this and move on? I don't know. It's just one of those things where all indications from the movie itself suggest that this is a story that will continue down the same path it has been on for quite a few years now, and we've just got a little bump in the road here. We'll see. And something they did that was a little interesting with this movie, they did a re-release, right?
Yeah, well, same with Endgame.
Much the same way that Endgame got that re-release. And it made me just wonder, is this going to be a thing now? Like, is this what we're doing with big movies, where there's just kind of nominally some extra material, but not enough to really justify double dipping, but you don't mind it because it was such a good movie anyway. And this is another one. I saw it was one and done for me. I didn't buy two tickets for this, but looking forward to seeing it again. And I wonder if Disney's gonna keep up with that approach of just after a big film finishes up its run, here you go. You get a second chance. Because we like money.
Yeah, yeah. A great, actually a pop you heard when the mid-credit scene, I guess, with the reveal of a character we didn't think we'd see again, or at least played by the same person.
Yeah, so, that too.
Yeah. So, Miranda, you saw this.
I did.
So, what'd you think of it?
I thought it was really good. It does lead into, I don't know, a very emotional way of trying to get people over in-game there, I think. So, you know, at least from the standpoint of, like, he looked at him kind of like big brother or dad or, you know, whatever correlation you want to put there. I've heard it different ways. He had that. Yeah, I mean, dad, but also, like, uncle, big brother, you know, a little bit of all of them, really.
Yeah.
It was funny, and I really liked it, and honestly, when it was over with, I even said, I think this may be my favorite Spider-Man.
Huh.
I did. I said it.
It was a lot of fun. It was.
You know, it was.
It had a lot, the whole summer romance thing with Ned and Betty, the whole courtship of MJ, basically, the awkward teen stuff, and the Happy's relationship with Peter was great. I mean, that one scene where Peter is like sitting
and with Aunt May.
Well, yes. I was gonna say the Aunt May was hysterical.
Yes, but the scene on the plane where Peter's kind of Tony Starking out with the with building the suit, and then Happy just looks at him and he just sees Tony right there. That was like I almost did a Miranda. I was like, oh, I'm not going to cry. Not going to cry.
Oh, is that what we're calling it now? We cry at the movies. It's
a Miranda. It is. It's now.
It is now.
Miranda.
Coined it. Copyright.
Okay. Yeah.
Exercise your Miranda rights to cry.
You know, growing up with a cop dad, everybody always thought that my name was Miranda because of that. It's not.
How unfortunate would that be?
That's really funny.
Yeah.
I never like, thought of really that. Like that's really right? funny.
So I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, come on. Come on.
So, wow, how much did your parents dislike you?
Wow.
All right. Russell, you haven't give us thoughts about Spider-Man.
This is my number two Spider-Man movie, live-action Spider-Man movie, still behind the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 2 from 2002. There's a lot of twos in there. Or 2004, excuse me. No, 2004 is when Spider-Man 2 came out. But, yeah, that's this was a tremendous movie. It was everything I hoped it would be and then some. Absolutely brilliant writing, acting, the visuals of it were great. I had no complaints about this movie. Now, to the elephant in the room that Tim addressed, I think they're going to get this worked out.
There's too much money to be made.
Yeah, they've still got several years before we really need to see Spider-Man again. You got a couple years off to try and get all of your ducks in a row here, work out all the contractual stuff and all the money things. But for both companies, for Disney and Sony, it would be leaving a lot of money on the table. And for Sony in particular, as Tim pointed out, they would be in a real bind with their story. What do they do? Do they try to continue off of the story that ended in the MCU? Well, how do you do that without referencing the things that happened within MCU continuity? You can't. You can't unless you're going to still be part of it. But Disney
can't think they're going to reboot. No. How stupid would that be?
Mentally dumb. All so that they could get Tom Holland in a Venom sequel. I'm sorry, Venom was pretty trash.
Yes.
It was not a good movie, and maybe the sequel will be better
because it's coming to be Carnage.
But I mean, Yeah, man, who knows? But I mean, I'm not really that enthusiastic about that one. I have zero expectations for Morbius to do any kind of numbers. Ultimately, what I think this comes down to is Sony's in real trouble. They do not have the big IP like Disney does. They are struggling to get their good franchises going and to keep them going, to keep them successful. Spider-Man is really all they've got. And I think that over the next few years, we're going to see their numbers continue to decline to the point where Sony will sell out to another company. Mm-hmm. It won't be Disney. Disney already dropped money on Fox. They're also notoriously frugal when it comes to their spending. So they're not going to just say, oh, well, let's just buy up Sony so we can get Spider-Man back. That wouldn't make any sense, because if Sony sells out to, say, let's say Amazon or Netflix or any number of other studios that are still out there, the rights to Spider would automatically revert to Disney because they are not transferable. So all Disney really has to do is sit back and buy their time. Either Sony's going to come to them and beg for a redo on this, or Sony's just going to go straight up out of business and they get Spider-Man back anyway. So it's not a question of if, it is a matter of time.
Hmm. Yeah, I had a thought and I totally lost it.
It does feel like just kind of a power play from Disney in these negotiations where, and I totally agree, Russell, that Marvel / Disney is not going to tolerate not being able to make Spider-Man movies. Don't think that's even an option for them. So I think they're right now. I think that maybe they should pump the brakes on trying to take control of like Venom and Morbius and this spinoff universe, just because I think they're kind of shit and beneath them. Like, they just don't worry about it. Like, don't exist. You know, just let's.
And their Spider-Man franchise. Yeah, you're right. Their Spider-Man franchise doesn't even need those characters. They don't need Venom or Morbius. Like, they've got a strong establishment with Vulture. They've got Scorpion on deck as well. They could easily exercise that. I think they could do a version of Doc Ock as well. I think they could bring that in. You've got a killer version of Mysterio that completely redefined the character for me. So what they really need, all this Spider-Man franchise really needs, is Kevin Feige.
Let Sony make their dumb shit spin-off movies. Pretend they don't exist, and let Sony get bought, go out of business, whatever's going to happen. They get the rights back anyway, but they will ultimately come to terms on at least Spider-Man, and that might be that just might be their bargaining chip, really. Disney saying, you know what, we don't care about Venom, we don't care about Morbius. So if that's really like the deal breaker here, so to speak, fine.
They should still put the offer on the table that they did before to start co-financing the movies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like the deal that they offered to Sony, they were like, we do want more money from these movies, but we also want to lower your cost in making them because we want to share the burden of that. Mm-hmm. And when Disney put that on the table, I was like, okay, well, that doesn't sound like it's such a bad deal. I mean, yeah, you might want to renegotiate, and I think there's room to, but straight up walking away from the table just seemed like the most ludicrous thing in the world to me.
I think the reporting on that got very garbled, because at first it was like, oh, Sony comes in, or Marvel comes in, dick on the table, says, you know, our 5% take, we want that to now be 90% or whatever it was. And it's like, that's not really what the offer that was put forth was. It was more of a true cost sharing and profit sharing type of arrangement. And I mean, say whether that was fair or not, but yeah, that significantly reduces Sony's cost to do the film. So, you know, you figure if it's going to make as much money as these others in the series have, Marvel / Disney's getting a bigger cut of that, but look at Sony's costs, they're going to be 50% less. Mm-hmm. So,
and you look at the elevation that Disney's involvement gave their Spider-Man franchise. Like, did they ever cross $1 billion on their own?
Right.
Yeah. No, they did not. And the quality of the film is just astronomically different. It's like, do you really want to go back to doing this on your own? They say that they're going to be fine. I don't know if even they believe that.
Right.
I question it. So all this, ultimately, it's going to get worked out, I think, and Tom Holland will be right back in the MCU, and we will proceed forward. It's just one of those, you know, we're watching the sausage being made in front of us, and it's an ugly process.
Mm-hmm.
So,
from what I understand, Tom Rothman, the CEO of Sony, is the big sticking point. Like, he's a very by the numbers guy.
Yeah, so, he is.
He doesn't see, I guess he's not seeing like, we could do this on our own. We got all these characters, you know. He doesn't see the big picture.
Not really seeing the nuance. Because this was more of a kind of an Amy Pascal deal that was set up, which was kind of unprecedented. And this partnership between Sony and Marvel. And she is someone who seemed to learn from previous mistakes. So, yeah.
All right, so we're going to move on to the final movie we're going to talk about in this first part of the show, which is Aladdin, the other Disney requel, I guess we'll say. I got to say, I actually enjoyed this a lot more than I had any right to. I thought Will Smith did his own take on the genie. I mean, I love Robin Williams. I wrote a paper in college about Robin Williams, basically, for a intensive writing class. We had to write different styles of papers, and one was called a portrait. And we had to basically paint a portrait with words, and I chose Robin Williams. So not a lot of bigger fans. And I totally loved Will Smith. I loved Nassim Pedrads being added. Her character gave some little more to it. I'm not sure where I stand on what I'm hearing, that they may make a live-action Return of Jafar. So, I mean, I did kind of enjoy it. It's been a long time since I saw that direct-to-video sequel, but I do remember enjoying it somewhat. But that was also the sans Robin Williams one. Mm-hmm. That's where they got Dan Castellaneta, the voice of Homer Simpson, to be the genie in that movie, because Robin and Disney were not exactly on good terms for that little while. But Miranda, I know you also saw Aladdin.
I did.
So
did I make you record by yourself on that one? Is that the one I fell asleep and didn't record?
Probably, yeah. I did. Well, I did Lion King and Aladdin solo. Seems like I can't get anybody on to do Disney with me.
No, I had every intention of it. Like, I truly.
Yeah, you fell asleep. Well, at least you didn't pod tease.
Yeah, I was like, hey, Andy, I'm not feeling great. Message me when you're ready to, like, start. And then apparently Andy did message me, and I fell asleep, like, on the couch, fell asleep. So, sorry.
Yes. Well, it's better than the pod teases that I've gotten from somebody else. So, like, we're going to do Aquaman, I swear. We're going to do Aquaman. Nope.
All right. So smarten me up here. Does this live action Aladdin still contain the scene where he says, teenagers, take off your clothes, or whatever it was?
What?
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. This urban legend? Oh, my God.
Well, no, yep. I've heard, like, a bunch about the different, like, I knew what you were talking about in Lion King, and then there's the one in The Little Mermaid. And
Yes.
I don't remember this one.
Oh, yeah. There's a line. It's where the tiger is like about to attack Aladdin. What's the prince
Ali?
Prince Ali in his Prince Ali form, and he's trying to romance Jasmine, and the tiger is like moving in on him, and he's kind of muttering to himself, and it's a line that it's kind of spoke like the focus is on Jasmine, and you're just kind of laughing because, you know, he's trying to deal with the situation with the tiger, and he says something like, teenagers, take off your clothes, in the middle of his, you know, diatribe trying to calm the tiger down. And it's just funny because all of these movies that supposedly have something like that. I mean, it's on right. Snoop's Urban Legend, whatever.
I would say Snopes,
excuse
it's
me.
False.
Yes. They've all gotten these live action remakes. Like The Little Mermaid is next, and that's like, oh god.
Yeah, The Little Mermaid has like all the things that are supposed to be like when they're going through the cave, all the pictures,
all the penises.
Yeah, like you can actually see men drawn on the cave in Little Mermaid right. are supposed to actually have like correct penises, like anatomically correct. Yes. Yeah. No, I don't remember that.
Roger Rabbit also has one.
Oh yeah, no.
Roger Rabbit has a couple actually.
Like, stuff in general that like was meant to go over.
Yeah,
like,
there's one where you think Donald Duck calls Daffy Duck a certain ethnic slur, and then there's another one where I think it was like they said on the laser disc only. When Jessica Rabbit gets thrown out of Benny the Cab when they come back from Toontown, you kind of see, you know, if the let's say the carpet matches the drapes or not.
I did not know that one. I knew the Donald Daffy thing. I didn't know. Okay.
Anyway, back to Aladdin.
Jokes on. Anyway, Aladdin. So, Aladdin. it actually was excellent. I expected it to have higher numbers than The Lion King. I really did. I just think there's a cult following with The Lion King that got it as high as it did versus like the Aladdin franchise. But I remember enjoying Aladdin more when it came out because they came out fairly close to each other. The originals mm-hmm. did. And I remember enjoying Aladdin more. Everybody was really hesitant about Will Smith, but I really liked his performance. It's not supposed to be. There were some people saying, well, he didn't do the song this way. And I'm like, okay, well, you can't have your cake and eat it too, which I hate that phrase because eat all the fucking cake you want.
Oh, Red Velvet.
Like, you can't not want him to be Robin Williams because nobody should be Robin Williams but Robin Williams. But you can't also want him to be Robin Williams when you finally do watch the movie. I thought he did excellent. There were times where I'm like, oh, that's not so great. Like the CGI stuff was not so great. So I did prefer when they had him in like human. I'm doing air quotes like everybody can see me. But like his human form. And there were some pretty good one-liners from Genie that were not – they were Will Smith's Genie.
Well, he was Hitch.
Right. Basically, honestly, I was thinking that the whole time. I'm like, I've seen this before.
Yeah, he channeled his inner Hitch.
Pretty much. That's a very accurate description. Mm-hmm. I liked the addition of Jasmine's song, which they did that in Beauty and the Beast, too. They added, like – they didn't really change the story, but they added some things. So I liked that addition of love interest for mm-hmm. Genie and adding song, Jasmine's song was very powerful. Overall, I left like thoroughly, like, I don't know. I'm out of words because I don't have any eloquent ones right now because they've evaded me. My son even very, very much enjoyed it. He will run around this house doing Will Smith's Genie song.
I mean, like I said, I enjoyed it. I did have one issue. Well, not really an issue, but like it stuck out to me because of one of my Scar and Jafar, two of my favorite villains. We got them both in the same summer. I thought the Jafar, he was too short. Like he wasn't imposing. And yes, he was a wizard or vizier, whatever the friggy his title, job title
right.
is.
Right. They did change that around some.
But he was not an intimidating person or character at all.
But was the other Jafar really that much taller, or was it that Dan Hattie wore?
No, he was tall.
Okay.
Yeah, it was both.
Well, the also, was also really short.
Yeah, Sultan was this short, fat little guy. So, yeah. So, Scott, you have anything to add on the last few movies we've spoken about? Toy Story 4, Spider-Man, Aladdin.
I didn't see any of them, but I think my thing was with Aladdin. I don't know. I felt – I guess you could go the same way with it about Lion King was what was it about Aladdin that had to be redone? I mean, like Robin Williams I thought was fairly flawless. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was something different they had to make about it. But again, it made it. I mean, yeah, it got its share of crap, but it did pretty well too. But no, I mean, all of them did as good as they were going to be. I don't know if we're going to see a Toy Story 5, probably. But no, I think they all did. They all performed as well as they were going to.
Russell, any thoughts on Aladdin?
You know, I'll catch it whenever it comes to Disney Plus. It was one that I wasn't necessarily all that on fire to go see whenever it was out in theaters, but you know, a lot of people seem to have gone to see the film and enjoyed it. So yeah, I'll probably try to sit down and watch it, although I said that same thing about the live action Beauty and the Beast remake, and I still haven't watched that. So
that was fine enough. Dumbo you can kind of skip, I mean, unless you really want to see Michael Keaton be an evil Walt Disney.
You know, that is intriguing, but at the same time, I had no interest in seeing a live action Dumbo because I don't like the animated Dumbo. So it's that movie was certainly not aimed at me.
All right.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to wait 25 years. And I'm going to see the animated remake of the live action remake of the animated film Aladdin. That's what I'm going to do.
There you go. Come full circle.
You just made my brain do like weird Inception shit. Like, what?
They're going to do it. I mean, why shouldn't they?
Everything's a copy of a copy.
Oh, you're not wrong. I agree with you guys that we've said this a couple of times, but and I think Russell started off with this. It's like when we talked about it initially before we did our wager was why do we have to repeat things? Like, why are there no fresh ideas? So I'm with you.
One way or the other, we're getting them, whether it's theatrical or Disney Plus. I mean, I'm looking at my D23 magazine, the latest issue that just came, and on the cover is the Lady and the Tramp live action that's coming to Disney Plus.
I'm actually excited. I loved Lady and the Tramp growing up.
It's a fun movie. Yeah. We'll have to see how they do with the with the animals talking thing, you know, with this technology. But that's for down the line.
I don't think they're supposed to talk in that one, are they?
No, they do talk.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Mm-hmm. There was a trailer.
There was some weird miscommunication reporting about that one, so I wasn't sure.
Well, it's one thing to look forward to with Disney Plus. But also, what else to look forward to? The rest of our countdown, and we're going to do that when we come back after a few words from Place to Be Nation. So, with Miranda Berthel, Scott Criscolo, Tim Capel, and Russell Sellers, I'm Andy Atherton. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. We dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.ProBoards.com. For all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to Looking Forward, Looking Back number 6. This is our big summer movie wrap-up of 2019, also our summer movie wager results and discussion. I am here with Scott Criscolo, Miranda Berthold, Tim Capel, and Russell Sellers. But first, let's talk about PlaceToBeNation.com, PlaceToBeNation Pop, PlaceToBeNation Wrestling. What's going on here at PlaceToBeNation? Here on the Pop Feed, Russell, you and Todd kicked off Flash Month with DC4U with guests hard-traveling fanboy Greg Phillips and the biggest Wally West fan ever, Mr. Ben Morse. They talked all. You guys talked all about the Scarlet Speeder's best stories, writers, artists, as well as his multiple appearances in TV and movies.
Yeah, it was a great time. Love talking Flash with both of those guys. They're huge Wally West fans, but just Flash fans in general. And if you've ever been interested to learn anything about the Flash, or if he's a character you might want to look into, that would be a great show for you to go and check out, because we'll give you some stories, some great classic comics that you can go read on the DC Universe app right now. And this week we got a new episode coming out all about the Flash 1990 pilot from that starred John Wesley Shipp in the lead role.
Great show.
It only lasted one season. Mm-hmm. But also featured Mark Hamill as the Trickster on Down the Road. But that that first episode is certainly a unique situation that needs to be seen to be believed. In fact, watch the episode and then come listen to our show. I think you'll find it very entertaining.
Awesome, awesome. Check that out. All right, the newest show here on the Pop Feed, we have siblings Kevin and Mary, and they host their brother-sister rewatch podcast. On their 15th episode, they bring you The Office Season 3, Episodes 1 and 2. We've got great content coming up every month. Jennifer Smith invited Nate Milton to watch Jordan Peele's Get Out on the 13th episode of Freak Out Drive-In. Jenny also joined me, Tim, and Scott on the last episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back. We looked ahead at the upcoming fall and winter movie releases, which we'll touch on a little later in the show. Marvel Age, one half of the Sarcastic Four here, Tim and Russell. You guys talked your concentrated look at roughly one-third of the most significant of Marvel's output throughout 1972, including horror titles. Tim, you and Jenny, yes, and Mr. Rosero, you guys were on the inaugural episode of The Companion to Pop Goes to the Movies, known as Pop Goes to the Couch, where you guys talked about Glow Season 3, which I saw and quite enjoyed. I thought it was a upturn from Season 2, which was still fun, but I thought this was better. Miranda.
Yes. We were all pretty complimentary of that season of Glow, and we're happy to kick off this new spinoff podcast. So it was an installment, this rundown of Glow, which we talked about the second season last year, mm-hmm, in a pop blast. We thought this was also going to be a blast, but we had so much to say about this season that it was a proper podcast length show, as I try not to pop the peas there.
Perfect. All right, Miranda, you made your triumphant return after your little hiatus for your medical leave, I guess we'll say, where you and Jenny, you ran down a comprehensive list of new and returning TV shows for this fall on the latest episode of Keek and Sassy, and also you had a huge announcement, you had a giveaway contest. Did you, is that contest still open?
It is still open until later this week. So today is Monday, the 16th of September. So
not sure if when they this have is a chance going up. To listen
to it. Right. So if it's past like Friday or Saturday of this week, then probably not. And which we're going to announce the winner after we draw it on our next recording. So sometime this week, they get to find out who won those tickets.
Awesome. Awesome. Whoever it is will have a great time, I suspect. Roger, the Cowboy, and D'Amato, they previewed while we were in C. They probably looked ahead to the next week of the NFL. So by the time you guys hear this, they probably will have previewed week 3. And then also, Tim, you and Jenny welcome Mr. Rosero again to Talk and Pop, talk weight loss, religion, and politics.
We did. Mm-hmm. We might have jumped the gun on this one because I feel like it's an episode you want to save for Thanksgiving, particularly Thanksgiving dinner. Put that on in the background with all your relatives together. Certainly some wonderful dinner table conversation here, religion and politics. And it's Thanksgiving, so weight loss. What more could you want?
Yes. Yes. Bad timing, guys. Bad timing. That's a bad. It's a bad call there.
Oh well. We'll get it right eventually. It's a fun episode though.
Also, the greatest song of the '80s tournament continued. Guys, we're almost at the end of round four, which is the regional quarters. The regional semis is round five. That means we're going to be down to 32 songs very soon, probably by the time this hits. So,
when's this going to be? When's this thing going to be wrapping up, Andy? We're getting down to the wire.
I'm saying. I'm thinking the 25th is the regional finals, which should take a couple of days. So probably by October 1st.
Thanks.
It will be all said and done. And then guess what? We have another tournament coming starting in November.
Department store tournament.
Yes. Yes. Will Macy's beat, Wanamaker's or, Target beat, Lord & Taylor?
Yes.
So awesome. Over on the wrestling feed, newest episode of Place to Be podcast. You guys, welcome back, Scott. You and Justin, welcome back, Kelly Nelson, to look at the final MSG House Show of the 1980s. No Holds Barred return. Justin and Aaron talked AEW, NXT UK, Wednesday Night Wars, and Neville Brothers, and then play a game of Pulled and Pushed. Don't even want to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Nope, don't.
Pete Winston and Steve Bennett wrapped up their series, breaking down their favorite all-time sports season on the Adams Division. The Machine, known as Ben Zanny, on episode 22 of Row 1C1, is joined by Cabana Man Dan to talk about his experience in over a decade in the wrestling business plus more. And finally, Tim, you, Jenny, and Greg were back at Talking WCW, and you took a deep dive on Ravishing Rick Rude.
So, and we talked department stores.
And you talked department stores, which is great. So don't forget, every Wednesday at PlaceToBeNation.com, the most interesting and unexpectedly funny stories from the World Wide Web in Glenn's weekly walk. I'm stumbling. Apologies. Scott, you and Mr. Logan Crosland, you're back for the college football fans. You have your weekly campus hot takes, looking back at the previous week and looking ahead to the biggest matchups. That goes up every Tuesday afternoon, right?
Yes, Tuesday afternoons, 4 o'clock.
Awesome. And don't forget, if you're doing your online shopping over Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage. It takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. If you're going to go on Amazon, it gets you the same way as if you go directly, except for we get a little help here at Place to Be Nation. So we appreciate it. We love you guys, and we thank you in advance. So let's get back to the show proper. And we're going to lead off at number six. Now, I didn't see this movie. I will catch up it eventually. But, Russell, you saw John Wick 3. So
I did.
We talked about it a little bit earlier, but this was somewhat of a surprise finishing at number six.
It's one of those that, as I said before, it's part of a franchise that's just on this constant upswing in both both in terms of how much money it's bringing in and in terms of its quality. Part three, I would say, surpassed part two in just about every way. It expanded the world and the universe in which John Wick exists to an even greater degree. Lots of really great new characters introduced, and of course, Keanu Reeves being his badass best self, just taking people down in some truly spectacular fight scenes. Probably the best fight scenes you're going to see in modern cinema, in modern American cinema anyway. These scenes are all just so well done, so well choreographed. And he's like, Keanu is really just at the top of his game. So there's a lot to love here. There's very little to dislike. It expands greatly off of the story that chapter two set up and sets everything up beautifully for another like big insane chapter to come after this one. So, you know what? I'm fully in. Like, they had my money already. I knew I was going to, like, go see this movie. Wound up just absolutely loving it. It's like I have all the others. I'm in this pretty much for the long haul. Sign me up for however many more of these they want to do.
Yes, I will catch that. I actually have to catch the second one, which is why I didn't see the third one and end up having to see stuff like 47 meters down uncaged. Ugh, I do not.
Trash Shark. That's Trash Shark movie. That's my bag, baby.
It's mm-hmm. it is the trash of trash. I mean, there was some fun.
Trash?
I mean, we got sharks that are blind, but because of where they are, they adapted, so they'll still eat you. And one of the dumbest ways to escape a shark, also ever seen on modern cinema. So I don't want to spoil it, but you're going to die one way or the other, and I'd rather take my chances one way than the way that the character chose to.
I really want a shark to have a sight cane.
No. Oh, my word.
Just strap it to the thing's head.
Yes.
Just tie it around and let it feel its way around with that.
It was one of those movies good where there's like Lord. There was that one character, you're just like, bitch, you gotta die soon. Oh, good. It's like, why is a shark going to eat your ass? Well, anyway, number seven.
Shout out to Crawl, though, which was actually good.
Crawl was a lot of fun, actually. Yes.
Crawl was tremendous. That should have been in the top 10.
Yes. I don't actually know where Crawl ended up this summer, but it was a little
it was movie. Like 20.
Yeah. But it was probably the best animal thriller horror movie
in a while, right? Yeah,
I mean, there were some good jump scares in that movie, and some good kills on the part of the gators.
I hope we are on an alligator zonce.
Alligator zonce. Like,
yes.
The long-awaited sequel to Lake Placid is gonna be a thing.
Yes.
They do rotate through animals. Like, we get on a shark kick, and then we get away from a shark, and then we'll go to something else. So, maybe.
Killer hippos.
Crawl finished 22, well, 23 for our purposes.
Oh, okay.
Right. Made $39 million. So it was, you know what? It made its budget back like three times over. So, yeah. Shit.
A modest hit.
Bring on more of these movies.
There you go. And then number seven was Hobbs and Shaw. Now, I'm the only one, I think, on the panel that saw it. It was fun for what it was. It wasn't any great shakes. Idris Elba did chew up the scenery and kind of, I guess, enjoy, because he doesn't play bad guys that often, right? I mean, I think he's a bad guy in Cats, which none of us are going to see because I don't want to have nightmares. But, yeah, it was fun. I mean, the girl, I forget the actress's name, but she was also in The Last Mission Impossible. Did a good job, and of course Roman Reigns was there, and Cliff Curtis played the Rock's brother, if you believe that. So you know, check it out when it comes on streaming. I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say about that. Now, none of us saw Secret Life of Pets 2. I didn't see the first one. It kind of looked like Toy Story with dogs to me, from what I understood.
Number one was pretty good.
Yeah,
it really was. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and. I mean, yeah, I think that franchise is, I mean, and Universal is investing a lot. They're actually building a Secret Life of Pets area, I believe, mm-hmm. in the Universal in California, in a theme park. So we'll see what happens there. And then Detective Pikachu was at number nine, and we've spoken all about that. Scott, you know, will never see that. If he does, he'll hate watch it. But
which might be more entertaining than love watching it. So
yeah, that's true.
Lord.
But and closing out the top 10, a film that, you know, was, you know, kind of a surprise, I think, you know, to finish in the top 10 was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Now, there was Mr. D'Amato joined me for a pod blast. But Scott, talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because you had it very high on your list with, you know, it was a big swing, but Mr. Tarantino truly, truly delivered in this movie.
Yes, he did. And I came to the realization, obviously, after a while, that Quentin movies don't make money, like not like gaudy money. I looked back at his previous movies. I own most of them. and even like the good ones like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, they didn't make a ton of money compared to like others. But Quentin just knows how to make a good movie. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was a great movie. But it was not going to hold up against movies where you could bring, again, you could bring, you know, a ton of people. But having said that, I think it might be Brad – it might be my favorite Brad Pitt movie of all time. He was fucking amazing in it. Leo was good. Everybody in it was good. Al Pacino was good. Margot Robbie was good. The dude that played I can't think of his name. The dude that played Roman Polanski's friend. I can't remember his name. Anyway,
he was pretty.
Yeah, he was good. The girl next door kid. Yeah, he was good. Everybody in it really delivered. And was it a little long? Maybe, but it's in that universe. It's that new Quentin universe of changing history, which he seems to like to do. And I could see this being a verse where all of Quentin's movies are like rewriting entertainment history. And I enjoyed it a lot, and I think it delivered as best it could. But this was a very competitive market this summer. And I mean, Pulp Fiction came out the same summer that Forrest Gump did, amongst other powerhouses in 1994. So he could hang, but now we're in an era where, again, movies are more kid-friendly, and we had a shit ton of Disney remakes and stuff like that. So it had a navigated difficult jungle, but I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot. And I think – and we're going to talk about a Brad Pitt movie for the winter. And I don't know if I'd have seen it. I don't know if I would have seen it if I didn't like him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think I've gained a whole new respect for Brad after that. That's what I got out of it. But it was a great movie.
All right. Russell, you also saw it.
I did. I thought it was a really – really well done Tarantino flick. Not my favorite of his movies, but certainly one that really brought it with the powerhouse performances. Brad Pitt was awesome. DiCaprio was great. And it's like I said on the previous episode, I think this one's going to be getting some Oscar, at least a little bit of that Oscar rub.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to win necessarily any of them, but I would be very surprised if it's not nominated in at least a few categories, including Best Actor noms for both Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio. There is a criticism out there of this movie that it's really just nothing but set up for the last 15 minutes. But if we're going to go there, then we got to say Avengers Endgame is nothing but set up for the last like 30 or 40 minutes. So,
right.
I'm not really willing to go there because I actually enjoyed the movie building up to that point. I will say pretty much the only scene in the movie that makes me feel uncomfortable, other than the brutal violence of the ending, which is in a lot of ways just totally justifiable.
Yes.
The Bruce Lee scene, the more I watch it, the more I think about it, the more I wish he hadn't done that. But at the same time, I can view it in a certain lens that makes even that somewhat justifiable. Although I totally get and even agree with the criticisms coming from Bruce Lee's daughter and from other people that knew Bruce Lee in life, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who also criticized that scene.
I can see why.
Yeah, like I get exactly where they were coming from and why they would say that, you know, this was not the man. This was not how he actually was. Although the actor playing him was spot freaking on.
Yes.
with the movements, the mannerisms, all that. Like, he had all of that so perfectly, and I now really want a biopic of Bruce Lee, like a proper biopic of Bruce Lee starring that guy.
Yeah.
Because he was awesome. I would love to see more of him. Only other thing that really surprised me about the movie was the lack of a certain character that I thought might be playing more of a role. Charles Manson. He appears once in the movie and half of a scene, and then you never see him again.
Yes.
And he does nothing except walk up on a house and act like he's there to see somebody who doesn't live there anymore. And he seems confused by this, and he walks away. End of Charles Manson in this movie. Although the guy that plays him also plays Charles Manson in the second season of Mindhunter. And if you haven't watched that, you need to go do it now, because in his bits as Charles Manson in that show, it is scary accurate and
he's
scary.
He's really fucking creepy.
Yeah, he's spot on Charles Manson, and it is eerie. It's like you're seeing the actual person standing there talking. He's got it all down. It'll shake you. It will affect you after you've seen it.
I got the creepy crawlies.
Yeah, like it still like gets to me that somebody was able to inhabit him in such an accurate and like fully realized way. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I would say it's kind of in the same, in a similar vein to Inglourious Basterds, in that it's revising history.
Yes.
but it is not, to me, as fun and entertaining and as engaging as Inglourious Basterds, though it is still a very well done movie and one that Tarantino should be proud of. So it was definitely worth the time to go see it. Unfortunately, the trip to the theater for me that night did not end so well. As me and Elizabeth were leaving the theater, she missed a step on the way out, or on the way down towards the exit, and wound up tearing a ligament in her foot.
Ooh.
So we were in the emergency room for most of the night. Didn't get home till sometime around 3 a.m.
Oh. And she's like still smiling. Like,
yeah.
Russell posted a picture and she's still like smiling, and I'm like, damn.
I didn't post that pic. She did.
Oh, did she? Okay.
Yeah.
I just remember seeing a picture of her and she's like still smiling. I just was like, did she break it? You're like, no, no.
No, she. Oh, and I tail and tails out of school here. She weren't smiling for a while going into leading up to that picture. Mm. And she certainly has some, you know, some continuing aches and pains that pop up every once in a while from it. But overall, her foot healed up pretty fast, and she hasn't needed the boot in a little while. And at least it was not broken. That's what we were very afraid of at first, that she may have actually broken a bone, but that wasn't the case, and everything seems to be okay now. And we actually did both still really enjoy the movie and plan to watch it again.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to see. I mean, I enjoyed it visually. I mean, I love movies set like in back in the days, 50s, 60s, whatever, because I love seeing how they recreate the sets and all how they can get like the old. Tarantino just loves things like the guy finds like old boxes of fruit to put in his movies and stuff. The only thing I had a problem with visually is those fucking dirty ass bare feet. Me and Mr. D'Amato went on a tirade about that. As somebody who hates bare feet and then dirty bare feet, oh my, when she puts her feet up on that dashboard and then her dirty fucking feet gets all over that windshield, I was just like, bitch, get out the car. I was like, gross. Oh, my God.
I was
squirming.
I think the hairy pits were worse for me. I think you guys are weird.
Yeah.
I thought the hairy armpits were worse.
I don't know. You don't see that nowadays.
You're fucking hippies, dude. I don't know what you were expecting.
You see dirty feet all the time.
You gotta get hairy armpits to be able to go have them waxed. So, I mean, I'm sorry. That wouldn't have bothered me. But, like, dirty feet? Bleh.
I literally was squirming in my seat. Even Margot Robbie, who is fucking hot as balls, sitting there, you know, takes her boots off and puts her feet up in the theater, and you just see these dirty ass feet. And I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God.
Gross.
And
gross,
like,
gross,
literally, gross. My girl, Ellen's sitting there next to me, like trying not to laugh because I'm like,
all weird,
visually squirming in my seat, like, oh my God. Anyway, anybody got anything else to say about anything in the top 10 as we move on to a few other movies? Tim, you're going to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood once
again? Well, I was going to say, I put it on my list. I put it in my top 10. Not as high as Scott did, but I had it as number 10 just with the simple justification of it feels like a summer movie that's going to be number 10. Knowing full well that Tarantino movies don't necessarily clean up at the box office, this one just felt a little different, felt like it had a lot more interest and kind of a more stacked cast of people with pretty devoted fan bases who would, if not turn up for other Tarantino films, then maybe they would for this one. And turns out they did. So, yay, I got one right.
Oh, you did have that number 10. Oh, wow, that actually changes the scoring up a little bit. I had you as only as a 3 points. Actually, you got 13 for that. So it will be adjusted when we make the announcement of the scores.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I did have something to say about this movie that I haven't actually seen yet.
Should I talk about all the movies and demand a recount? Just kidding.
I will look forward to this one on... I'll probably cancel Netflix in the next month or so, but, you know, whatever it lands on, other than Netflix, maybe.
All right. So we're going to talk about a few other movies that a lot of us had on our lists, but didn't make the top 10. Godzilla, too, we talked about that. Miranda and I both saw that. It was, you know, big monsters. It was, I don't know, it just, I liked it. I didn't love it.
We did a recording on that one, too.
Yeah.
It was basically Andy saying, and me going, I love this so
much. That's kind of a lot of the Pop Goes the Movies with me and Red. I'm like, yeah. She's like, I love it.
Miranda's like, it's fucking awesome.
I was like, yeah, Miranda's getting, I'll enjoy this one. Yeah. It's not a fucking bird movie.
We talked about that because then we were like, wait.
There were
something in there that we were like, yeah. Does that classify as a bird?
Yes, there were some flying monsters in there. And then we also talked about Men in Black International. We combined that with Toy Story? Or...
Yeah, I think because you and I had done, I joined you on Laugh In for the original Men in Black, so we kind of went over it when we talked about Toy Story.
Yeah, we both were disappointed in it. You know, there were some decent elements in it. I mean, Kumail Nanjiani was great as the little, I forget the character's name, the little guy he was.
He sold it for me, yes. But I did buy it when it came out on TV. And I've already watched it twice, so...
And then, Scott, you and Mr. D'Amato did a great episode of Pop Goes the Movies yourselves on Rocket Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Greatly enjoyed that. Russell, you also saw Rocket Man.
Yep.
Any thoughts?
I was pretty impressed with it overall and found it to be the antithesis to Bohemian Rhapsody in that it did not shy away from any of the things that people might have found offensive. It told... more of the story of the person that Elton John was than Bohemian Rhapsody did for Freddie Mercury, but at the same time also embellished the ever living hell out of a lot of his story, and then just like straight up made up some stuff that just didn't make a lot of sense to me. But because the real story is far more intriguing than like. Some of the stuff they made up for dramatic effect. But Egerton's performance as Elton John was spot freaking on. He was absolutely great. He performed the music, which gets big respect from me whenever
he's
they
amazing.
Do one. When they do one of these musical biopics, if the lead actor is lip syncing it, I feel like I'm only getting half a performance out of them. In this case, it was the whole show, And even if the movie wasn't necessarily good enough to be nominated for like Best Picture, I think his performance is definitely good enough to get a Best Actor nomination, and it should, because he was real good in it. Rocketman is one that I will recommend just for the visual spectacle of it, his performance, and the music being done so well. So it's that's three real good reasons to watch this movie.
Yeah, my feet were like moving the entire movie.
Like, the music will move you, and it's a testament to how good his music is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have some issues with some of the stuff that seemed out of place. Like, you know, I wrote this for this. That's like, no, it's not. That's not accurate. They're like, you were not in rehab then, you know, when the song came out. Sorry, you know, kind of thing. But it was a very enjoyable movie. I thought great performances. Tate Donovan was really good as that the club owner, right? He owned the
guy that owned the Troubadour. Yeah, the guy that owned the Troubadour.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah, but I thought there were very good performances all around, especially.
I think the actor that played Bernie Taupin was outstanding.
Yes, he was Billy Elliot.
Yeah,
the guy, the kid.
Bryce Dallas Howard playing his mom was excellent. But yeah, I feel like, you know what it is. I'll say this very quickly because again, listen to the Pop Goes the Movies for D'Amato and I. But I find it hard to. I know this is going to sound very strange, but I find it hard taking seriously a biopic written by the person with which the biopic's about. And the rest of Queen doing something about the band and Freddie is one thing, but Elton doing pretty much his own biopic, I find a little self-serving. But it didn't make the movie unrealistic, and I did enjoy the entertainment aspect of it. And Taron Egerton was tremendous as Elton. I will not take that away from him, but – it did get a little warbly in the middle, but it was a good depiction of Elton. Just maybe a little far-fetched at times, because for years and years he never really said many bad things about his mom, and then in the movie his mom's kind of a nut job, so I don't know. But on a side note, before we continue, the next rumored big time music biopic that I believe they're slating for 2021 is going to be the Bee Gees.
Ooh.
Which I think is going to be incredibly badass because I love the fucking Bee Gees. So I know Barry's the only one left. So and that includes Andy. He's dead. In fact, he was the first one to die, and he was the youngest. So I'm looking forward to that in a couple years. But anyway, listen to D'Amato and I and the Rocket Man. It was tremendous. But I wanted to make that point.
Yeah, it was entertaining, but, you know, it was definitely not a documentary. as far from that as you could.
Right.
All right, so, and then a few other movies that came out that some of us, like, had words to say about. Angry Birds 2 did not do as bad as Tim had hoped.
Some of these
choices were wishful thinking on my part, I guess. But what can you do? Mm-hmm. Who knew that Dark Phoenix was, you know, going to be the bird movie bomb of the summer.
Yes. You know, and then
it was a bird movie.
Yeah.
It really was.
It laid an egg.
Not my bird movie.
It flew the coop. Some other movies that came out, Dead Don't Die came out, which I saw, and I'm kind of mixed feelings on it, where I liked the performances. I just didn't like the rules of the zombie world in that Jim Jarmusch movie. There was some brutal fucking kills in it too. I mean, it was more played for comedy, but yeah, there was a couple of characters that just get fucking killed, and like you don't even see it. You just see what the aftermath, and you're like, what the fuck kind of thing? It kind of jars you. Shaft came and went, didn't do anything. Ugly Dolls. What else did we talk about? It didn't make our list, but nobody really talked about it, but I saw Ready or Not, which at first I was like kind of like eh on, but then like the more it sunk in, it's a fun horror comedy. I was expecting more horror, and it was actually more comedy, but I would recommend that when it comes out for home release. So that's going to lead us into the reveal of the results for the Summer Movie Wager. And we had 11 participants. So we had the six of us on the initial pod, plus five other people from the nation, other hosts and the like. Coming in number 11th is Miss Miranda with 42 points.
Hence, Mrs. Irrelevant.
Yes. Before, also, just want to say a big shout out to Slash Film. They're the ones that created this contest. They have their website, thesummermoviewager.com. Check it out. We added our own little wrinkle, The Biggest Bomb, which does have a lot of effect on the outcome of this thing. But just want to give a shout out to the originators of this. And, you know, we are going to keep doing our own thing. So, you know, thanks, guys. So, at number 10, with 46 points, Mr. Scott Criscolo. Now, again, you guys both took some big swings. And, you know, Scott, you I think maybe you thought more with your heart than your head when it came to Mr. Tarantino coming in second.
Well, I also didn't trust the kitty metrics. Now that I've learned that all movies with three-year-olds win, then I'll have to remember that next time.
No,
swing and a miss. It's okay. It happens.
Yes.
And then, semi-relevant.
With 52 points, Jenny came in ninth. So, you know, pretty much middle of the pack here. Tied at number seven was Mr. Andrew Riesch and Russell with 56 points.
I accept my win for the for the middle. Thank you very much. I couldn't have done it without all of you encouraging me, and for those who finished below me, thank you for making such boneheaded picks. You have elevated me to new heights.
Yes.
To the middle.
To the
at number six was Mr. Jason Sherman with 57 points. And coming in fifth, 63 points, one half of the HTFs, Mr. Nick Duke. And then right above him at number four, the other HTF at 67 points, Mr. Greg Phillips. Now, due to the recent scoring fix, which I said, please check my math, guys, and my scoring when I posted this, Mr. Tim Capel goes up to third with 68 points.
My gosh, there's not many occasions that I get to top Greg, but yes. Man, I'll take it here.
Yes, getting so remember the rules are, you know, you get 13 points if you get 1 or 10 head on, and you get 10 points for every other one you get head on, and then it's 7 if you're 1 away, 5 if you're 2 away, 3 if you're on the list, and then I guess 1 point for every dark horse or wild card that makes your list. So that was the scoring algorithm. Now, if we were playing purely by Slash Films rules, the manager, Todd Weber, with 79 points. Very impressive. Mm-hmm. Had six movies dead on out of 10 at 79 That's points. Impressive. However, due to The Biggest Bomb with 82 points, I win the contest. I would have had 57, but surprisingly, I was the only one to pick Dark Phoenix as the biggest bomb of the summer. Considering, you know, that there were five comics guys, plus Jenny and Miranda, who know comics also, and Scott, you know more about comics than I do, that, you know, you guys all, you know the X-Men quite well and know how badly that franchise was doing. You know, they already did it badly before with Brett Ratner basically shitting on the franchise with X3, X-Men United. And then
that made a lot of money, though.
It was horrible, though. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I truly thought that Hate Watch, like, let's just give it a shot, was going to happen. And that's why I even gave it a chance.
Yes.
I just thought that X-Men as a franchise had a ceiling that was higher than what Dark Phoenix did. Even with it being a bad or boring, uneventful movie, like, I just thought it would be really impossible for them to do less than, I don't know, a certain number. I think I said 100 million. Mm-hmm. And, wow, they did a lot worse.
Well, also, you look, Days, X-Men New Class was phenomenal. I really loved that movie. Days of Future Past, I liked, you know. Apocalypse was horrible. It was just long and boring. I just thought it was...
Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, so I just thought after that, I think people were done with the X-Men. They know that the X-Men, as it is, are going to get rebooted. So that was my kind of thinking going into this, to Dark Phoenix. So with that said, I get to pick a movie for all of us to do a live watch of and have a lot of fun on a pod. So I had a lot of considerations. And
drum rolls.
I was going to drum rolls. But I'll tell you a few movies that I considered that I didn't go with. I thought about Cannonball Run, but I was like, oh, probably only Scott and I were probably alive when that movie came out. So I don't know how much you guys have seen that. I love that movie, but hopefully I'll get that on Laughing Theater. Then, as Tim alluded to earlier, we did have some chatting over the weekend about some other things, and he suggested Napoleon Dynamite. And I also,
I don't know that I seriously suggested it, but I might have mentioned it. Yeah,
it piqued my interest, but I didn't. I ultimately decided not to go with that one. I thought of doing the Banana Splits horror movie, but that required all of you to go out and buy the movie. So I don't want to incur any costs on anybody. So, well, hopefully you all keep your Netflix because that's where the movie I actually picked is on. Okay. And then two other movies I thought of. I thought of Caddyshack 2, but I like you people, so I don't want to do that to you.
I'd have fucking killed you.
Wow.
And then one that almost was I was very close to going with it was Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, okay.
Which I really like that horror comedy. But the movie that we are going to have a live watch of, and I think we can have a lot of fun with, from 2010, starring Michael Cera, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Anna Kendrick, Kieran Culkin, Jason Schwartzman, Chris Evans. It is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, I hated that fucking movie.
It's not a bird movie.
Tim, I'm right here with you. Oh, boy.
Wow.
Boy, I have to sit through this.
I haven't seen it since 2010, admittedly, so I don't know how it's aged necessarily.
I'll be fair. I only watched half of it because I was like, "Fuck all this."
That bad.
If it inspired me to turn it off, yeah, it is.
Well, I actually did. I didn't really like it that much the first time I saw it, but as repeat viewings, I've actually become a big fan of the movie. So,
okay.
It's movies, video games. You know, it's stupidity.
Where do you buy your drugs?
So that's going to take place sometime between now and the start of the next summer movie wager. So Steve,
you realize you picked a comic book movie.
I did pick a comic book movie.
Yeah. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think I was going to get the reaction that I got just now, but I was like, I was going to hear like, oh.
Honestly, though, hating a movie that we have to watch is not necessarily a deterrent. That can produce some shall we say spirited live watches, perhaps.
Yes. Well, that's what it's all about. It's about having a fun live watch. If you want to hate on it, make fun of it, that's cool. I mean, I'm not gonna die on the Scott Pilgrim hill. You know, so
imagine someone who would.
And I probably could name a few people, but I don't want to get chewed out.
a certain segment of comics Twitter.
All right. So before we go, though, we're gonna we did a fall movie winter preview, but had we done a fall winter movie wager, everybody was gonna pick Star Wars Episode IX. We all know that, and everybody would pick Frozen 2 as their number 2. What do you think you would have picked at number 3? There were many choices. There's It Chapter 2, Ad Astra, the Brad Pitt movie, as Scott talked about earlier, Joker, Zombieland Double Tap, Charlie's Angels, Knives Out, Jumanji, The Next Level, or something I may not have put on there. Scott, what do you think you would have got with for number 3?
I would not put, but as much as I absolutely loved the movie and the other half of Geek and Sassy and I did an exceptional Pop Goes the Movies on it, Chapter 2 is not going to make enough money to finish number 3. It'll make a ton of money, and it'll probably finish maybe like 7th if we did a whole 10. I'm trying to think of – I'm looking at the schedule of stuff you didn't say.
Cats.
Yeah, right.
Can we just go ahead and all agree that that's the bomb?
That would have been the biggest bomb. Yeah, I would have had that.
I got to be honest with you. I got a weird feeling that I have a weird feeling Joker might be the biggest bomb.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's getting good reviews.
It's getting average reviews. I wouldn't say it's getting good. I would say it's getting average, but you never know.
Tim, we know you would pick Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, clearly.
Playmobil the movie. That's what I would have as number three because kids will go see it. No, I'm only kidding. How about Jumanji the Next Level? I would go with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be number three.
I know somebody who won't be going to see that. They're also not on this show. But,
she went to number one with me.
You're like, Miranda wants to see it. You're going to see it.
Yep, she did. We took our boys and we went and saw number one. And the minute somebody came on the screen, I was like, Jenny. And she's like, shut up.
Kind of a hot hate watching, huh?
I think Joker is a solid number three, actually. It feels like we're in kind of a Joker sauce right now.
Is this the songs episode?
I mean, it's just, I think for good, whether it's good or bad, everybody's going to see it. I can already tell it's going to be one of those movies that a lot of people like and I'm going to hate.
It's going to be polarizing.
It's just inevitable, I think. But yes, very polarizing and very, if you're ever going to release a Joker film that's going to make a whole lot of money, like a standalone Joker movie, I think they kind of timed it right, again, just to make a lot of money and not to say anything whether it's going to be bad or good. We'll find out pretty soon.
All right. Russell, what do you think would be your number three?
This is tough. I could easily see – I'm with Tim here. I could easily see Joker doing a number three money and as against – an origin movie for Joker as I am, just on sheer concept, I'm going to go see it. Mm-hmm. The reviews are better than average, actually, whenever looking at the overall aggregate and of the, especially the ones that really center around the performance of Joaquin Phoenix. It's doing really well. It's winning some pretty big prizes at the, on the festival circuit. So, there is something to this, and I think there's going to be enough curiosity there to get people to go check it out. Will it do enough money to be number three? Good. I think that Jumanji The Next Level is probably the one to come closest to it after Joker, because I think that there's still enough left in the tank for that franchise. It's been revived in a pretty big, bad way. Hopefully the new movie's good. Look out for Knives Out to be a bit of a sleeper, though. I've heard there's a lot of good buzz about that movie. So that's another one. And another one that I think is kind of flying under the radar a little bit, but trailers have me intrigued enough to go and check it out, is Gemini Man. I think that one has some real potential to make some noise whenever it drops.
Noticeable groan.
I was like, okay, what's going on?
I was like, I don't give a fuck. That movie looks fine. And you know what? You can hate whatever the fuck you want, but it still looks pretty decent to me. And Ang Lee and Will Smith are both do at least something new for each of them instead of just playing the franchise game, which. I say that, and the Bad Boys 3 trailer actually looked pretty funny. So,
yeah.
Yeah, well.
But when I saw it, I went, but why?
Yeah, it's one of those that probably doesn't have much of a reason to exist. But if you give me a couple of hours of Will Smith and Martin Lawrence bouncing off of each other and just telling really offensive jokes and every once in a while shooting somebody and blowing stuff up, I'm pretty much in. Yeah. It doesn't have to really do anything other than that to be successful. It's a Bad Boys movie. You can't – don't set your expectations that high. So it's there's a good bit left to go for this year that could go either way. I think it's a little
maybe a little too late for a Zombieland sequel. Although it could wind up surprising me. I want that one to be good. I really do. But I don't know. Very, very iffy from the first trailer. It feels like maybe they said all they really needed to with the first one, and maybe this is just a little bit of a desperation play, but we'll see. No real interest in Charlie's Angels, and hoping to go see It Chapter 2 a little bit later this week, because I absolutely love the first one.
All right. Yeah, I was going to go with Knives Out. I mean, Charlie's Angels could surprise people. You know, it looks better than the Drew Barrymore ones, in my opinion, just released on the trailer.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. And Ad Astra, I mean, that's got a lot of good.
It does look good.
Slash Film, actually, on their website, had a very positive article about it today. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's something you got to see, like, in a big screen with, like, that kick-ass Dolby, because you're going to have all that sound effects, kind of like how Gravity was. It's kind of like Gravity meets Interstellar to me.
It's an IMAX movie for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other thoughts on the fall-winter movies quickly before we move on to looking ahead to next year?
I said I wanted to talk about Ad Astra for a couple minutes, and I've seen the trailer a few times, and I've become very, I don't want to say cynical, but skeptical of certain movies that look awesome in a 2.5 minute clip and probably look shitty in a 2.5 hour clip. And I want to like it because I love those kind of, I mean, I'm a sci-fi junkie, so I love that shit. And I'm on a high Brad kick because he was awesome in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I'm crossing my toes because that can end up being a long, dull stinker. You can also see that too. So I'm optimistic, but very cautiously optimistic. And my apologies, Russell, for my groaning, but I can fucking hate what I want to. And I'm just because he was Aladdin, Will Smith still makes crap. So I just didn't. I watched that and I went, this looks fucking stupid. But maybe it won't. Who knows? But Ad Astra, I want to be optimistic that it's going to be really good. But 15% admit tells me it's going to be long and dull, but we'll see.
All right.
Depends how it's executed.
All right. So looking ahead to next summer now, probably going to start in April again. It's very wide open now. Of course, release dates are subject to change. New Mutants are Miss Fowl. So who knows if those will even be released next year or ever.
I hope, honestly, that.
Well, you know what? They have Disney Plus as a dumping ground just in case.
That's true.
So it will see the light of day, whether it sees the light of day in a movie theater or on a TV is another story. But no, I think they have a lot. They're kind of investing in Artemis Fowl, like, to become a franchise. So, you know, who doesn't need a good bird movie franchise, right?
Exactly.
God, you guys are killing me.
Chicken Little.
So I actually enjoyed that. Animated movie Chicken Little. I thought it was a lot of fun. They didn't have a lot to work with, and it was a lot of fun. Of course, my kids were really little, and I saw it a lot, over and over. So maybe that was just a repetition, just burned it into my head. Anyway, so looking into the summer of 2020, we'll quickly go through a list of what we feel may be the biggest releases. No Time to Die coming out April 10th, which is the next James Bond movie. We have Trolls World Tour. Now, you know, those two movies, you know, if those are in, if those are not, those will really change the dynamic of the contest. If we were to start in May, those two movies would be ineligible. And I think those are two both probably top 10. We have.
Seeing what Trolls did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have Black Widow, the only MCU entry that coming out. And then we have Legally Blonde 3, Scoob, which I guess is a big budget revitalization of the Scooby-Doo franchise, the aforementioned Fast and Furious 9, the SpongeBob movie, the Bird movie, Artemis Fowl, Wonder Woman 1984, a Candyman remake, an animated movie from Disney, Raya and the Lost Dragon, Top Gun Maverick, Minions, The Rise of Gru, which is, I believe, what they did was they took Minions 2 and Despicable Me 4 and kind of combined them. Some movie called Free Guy, which I didn't write the description, I'm sorry. But it looked like, from what I read, it was something to look at. Tenet, which is the Christopher Nolan movie. Jungle Cruise, starring The Rock and Emily Blunt. Morbius, which Russell mentioned earlier. And Infinite. Coming out, so
am I the only one that's like Morbius? Woohoo! Let's do this. Is it just
I think
me?
It could
okay,
be good, but I think it could be good. I don't think it's coming out July 31st, though.
Okay, yeah.
Okay,
that is ambitious.
Well, it's all, you know, again, like we said, it's all subject to change.
So, I mean, do they even have a cast for this thing?
For which one?
Morbius?
Yeah, according to IMDb, they do.
Well, it's, what's his face? Jared Leto.
Jared Leto.
Jared Leto.
Perhaps I will eat those words and consume plasma with suckers on the palm of my hands.
Yes.
All right, so Free Guy.
As a true neogenic nightmare.
So Free Guy is... the description is, a bank teller discovers that he's actually an NPC inside a brutal open-world video game. It is directed by Sean Levy, starring Taika Waititi.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
A bank teller discovers that he's actually an NPC inside a brutal open-world video game. And it stars Taika Waititi, Ryan Reynolds, Jodie Comer, and Channing Tatum.
So he's like an extra
guy inside. Wow, was like, oh shit, I'm in a game.
And then
he's like an extra in the Matrix kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I kind of like the sound of this.
Yes. And then Infinite is, a man discovers that his hallucinations are actually visions of past lives, and that's directed by Antoine Fuqua, starring Mark Wahlberg, Dylan O'Brien, Jason Mantzoukas, and Rupert. Friend, I don't know. And then we also have Bill and Ted Face the Music coming out in August. So it is a fairly wide open field. Tim, where do you think your list could lead right now? I mean, of course, we're quite a ways away from this. You know, March is probably when we'll have to do our picks.
Gosh. It's interesting that Marvel's laying out largely for next year. I mean, it makes sense that they would after the wrap-up they just had with Endgame. But they've got Black Widow, which I think a lot of people are looking forward to, have been for a long time, should make decent money. But we've also got DC, a little counter-programming perhaps in Wonder Woman 1984. I don't know that I go Wonder Woman as my number one, but definitely top five. Gosh, there's no obvious winner to me. I think Top Gun's going to be up there. I think certainly Fast and Furious 9, part of the equation too. Some combination of like those, how many is that, four or five, would be my top five.
Yeah, I think with Trolls, Reina and the Lost Dragon, and Minions, they're fairly spread out enough where they're all going to make money. So, Miranda, what about you? What do you think your list could look like at this early stage?
Well, if we're grabbing, I think I'm going to stick with kind of like Tim did and grab like the five that I think would be somewhere within my top 10. I'm definitely going Trolls, and Wonder Woman, Black Widow for sure. I also feel like Minions, cause it's just kind of like, it's got this whole like following of its own, adults and children. So I think Minions is in there somewhere. And I kind of want to, I want to hope that Bill and Ted would be in there.
The only thing about Bill and Ted, it's coming out late in the summer.
That is true. And we talked earlier about some of these that came out later. Like, did that hurt them? So I don't know, but those are like five of the ones that right off the bat that I have no qualms about saying, like, there's, I feel like they're somewhere in the top 10. Right. But I have reservation with Jungle Cruise, to be very, very honest.
Yeah.
So it's based off the Jungle Cruise ride from Disney.
And it takes place in, I believe, the 30s.
Right, and it's got the Rock in it, which, why? Like, is that not just like him being a Jumanji again?
Well, he likes to be in the jungle. Look at Jumanji, then you got, Rampage, and you got, what was the other one? The Rundown.
Is it because he's like hot, glistening with sweat? Never mind, I won't go there.
And he doesn't, say no. Yes, he's your nerd eye candy, I know.
Yeah, for life.
So he's kind of chasing that Pirates of the Caribbean movie money.
That's really what it is. Yeah, they're hoping it's more Pirates and less Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
Well, Haunted Mansion had potential to be so much better, but that is a whole podcast by itself.
Had we gotten the Guillermo del Toro Haunted Mansion like we were supposed to, instead of that piece of shit Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion, then that's a whole other conversation.
I still liked it for what it was, but it could have been better, a lot better.
There's a lot of I actually did something a few years ago when I was just playing around. There's a few attractions that they could do. They could do Hall of Presidents, you give it like a Night at the Museum kind of feel, kind of thing. Now this is pre the current president. I'm not saying for or against, just.
There's too much controversy.
It's a much different movie if you include the current president and all the presidents kind of movie. but there's a few rides. I mean, you could even make a ride at a test track. You just gotta, just write the right script. Right.
I do think I read somewhere that they are going to redo, or they want to redo Haunted Mansion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a small world.
After all.
That would be really scary.
It would. That would be
it already is.
It'd be like the Banana Splits horror movie. Scott, what about you? What do you think your list will shape up to be?
I'm looking at it from two different angles. First, obviously from a personal perspective, I'm very excited for No Time to Die because I'm a Bond junkie, and this is the third major. A movie franchise that's not necessarily ending, but this is going to be the last Daniel Craig. And then they're in limbo too, because I mean, there's been rumors on a zillion men and women that have been talked about to be the next James Bond. So I'm pumped for that, but that's not going to finish in the top 10. Well, it'll finish in the top 10. I don't know about the top 5. Trolls will probably be up there. I'm going to go out on a limb. And this is only for a fatigue factor, but when all is said and done, and I will reiterate this when we do that preview, Wonder Woman will make more money than Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's Marvel fatigue. I think people are fried. All right, it's done. Move on. And I think of all the – if this was any of the other DC movies, I wouldn't say that, but that was – first of all, Gal Gadot kicked ass in the first one, and she's just mm-hmm. great in that role anyway. And I think this is actually a DC movie people are actually looking forward to seeing. Whereas nothing against Scarlet and nothing against Black Widow as a character, but since the story's over, are people going to be that excited to backtrack? That's only right. that's only my concern. I might be wrong. That's fine. And it's not going to be a bomb or anything. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying that I think people are more excited to see how DC goes now that they're in kind of the one – not in the driver's seat, but they're the ones who are continuing their story. Trolls is going to kick ass because it's a kid's movie. I also think that – I lost my train of thought. My bad. Hold on. I also think that – it's 108 on the East Coast. I think the SpongeBob movie is going to do well because it's fucking SpongeBob.
How is there another SpongeBob
movie? Did we not have a SpongeBob movie already?
We did.
Sorry, Tim.
15 years ago. No, I'm thinking the same thing.
Well, no, we had one when Caden was like 4 or 5, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It would have been that long ago.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Top Gun's going to do great because all the women of 1986 are going to go jump to that. And men, because Top Gun's awesome. I don't know why we're getting, and this is just the horror junkie in me, and I'm curious the other half of Geek and Sassy's opinion, but I don't know why they're doing a reboot of Candyman, because Tony Todd kicked ass as Candyman, and I don't understand why we have to get a reboot of that. But
they reboot everything these
they
days,
do. Apparently. And I will say this as an olive branch to you, Miranda, mm-hmm. for my dislike of gold-colored mice, I will go see Artemis Fowl and
what?
And I will do the Pop Goes the Movies with you.
You guys heard that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
But is. Atherton, you got to moderate it.
All right. I might be drunk.
But I'll still do it.
Okay.
But I'll still do it. Why the hell not?
I'm still drunk from seeing the movie.
I'm drunk from seeing Scott Pilgrim. So
I'm gonna drink during that one probably, and Miranda hardly ever drinks, but that's okay.
Yeah. So Scoob will do well.
Scoob will do well because it's Scoob. Hit or miss.
We'll see. But yeah, that's my opinion. I'm pumped. Personally for me, I'm pumped to see No Time to Die because I'm a Bond junkie. But I would not be surprised if Trolls makes a fucking shit ton of money.
Is Infinite based on like a YA novel book series or something?
Hang on, let me look.
I don't know. It was a brief description I got off IMDb.
I mean, it sounded interesting in the way that what was the other one? Free Guy also sounded interesting, and I guess by that I mean they sound somewhat original. Like they're not adaptations from some other media, but at the same time, like those descriptions could also be like from books or something.
I was actually going to ask if Ad Astra, when you guys were talking about it, if that was from a book.
Hmm. No. Russell.
Anyway,
Russell, what about you? What do you think your early predictions would be, or list would shape up to be?
Yeah, it's tough because 2020 is kind of low key awesome, and it's summertime offerings. There's a wide variety of stuff here. Mm-hmm. I too am also really pumped for No Time to Die because I have loved every Daniel Craig Bond movie. And,
me too.
Dude just delivers. He is Bond in my mind. It's my preferred take on Bond anyway. So I'm very much looking forward to this ending. Hope they cap it off in a really good way. I mean, as much trouble as this movie's had behind the scenes, I want it to just come out and be like the most kick-ass one they've done yet. Mm. You know, that's the kind of success I hope it has. I also don't think that it gets to that top five, but it's hard for me to imagine it not in the top 10. Trolls World Tour, as has been said, likely going to be big. I think Black Widow is going to ride that MCU wave, maybe not to the highest grossing MCU movie you've ever seen, but I think it's going to do more than fine. Will Wonder Woman 1984 make more money than it? I'm going to say that it probably should, but I don't know if it gets there. I hope it does. It should. I think we haven't seen anything like any of what Raya and the Last Dragon looks like, but it's Disney, and I believe it's all, isn't it Pixar? I think it's a Pixar film.
Yep.
And that being the case, they rarely miss. So that sounds like something that's going to be right up their alley. Sleeper hit, Free Guy. That one is that one just sounds awesome. It sounds hilarious. Top Gun Maverick is unfortunately going to make all sorts of fuck money and I was really hoping that maybe Tom Cruise would just, you know, live his life and forget about doing that, but here we are. There's a movie missing from this list. That
New Mutants.
There's a movie missing from this list that's actually going to come out.
Oh.
And that is Ivan Reitman's Ghostbusters 2020, which comes out on July 20th.
Soon.
And I am here for it. Everything about this movie so far sounds like it is everything I want it to be. I am so pumped to get a look at this thing. Just all my Ghostbusters fandom is peaking at this point. So I need that movie to come out and do well. I want it to be top. I want it to be so good that it cracks that top five and like reminds people why it's such a beloved. It was a beloved franchise in the first place. And it's back in the hands of Reitman, so I have a lot of confidence here. Dan Aykroyd is heavily involved, as is Ernie Hudson. Talk is that Bill Murray is back in to come back and do reprise of Peter Venkman. I mean, it probably would have taken the involvement of both Ivan and Jason Reitman to get that done. So Paul Rudd, being a member of this cast, has me just all sorts of giddy, because I couldn't imagine a more perfect addition to the Ghostbusters cast. It seems like that's going to be in my personal top five. That's probably wishful thinking, but I'm going to put it there anyway.
All right. Yeah, very cool. Of course, release date subject to change. This is early speculation. We will not be doing our picks, our official picks, until sometime in March. But until then, we have a lot to look forward to. Lots of trailers coming out. Lots of speculation. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope everybody had a good time doing the Summer Movie Wager. I know I did. It's something I've always wanted to do. And I'm glad you guys were willing participants. And it was just a stroke mm-hmm. of luck that I actually came out on top on this. And I hope we have fun watching Scott Pilgrim, whether it's a like watch, a hate watch, a drunk watch. I don't care. Just, let's get together. Let's watch a movie and have a little fun. That's really what this was all about.
Yeah. It's going to be that last one.
Very much so.
All right.
So, like and drunk. Can I do both? I like watch it and drunk watch it?
Well, whatever you like to do, Miranda.
Yes.
Yes, have some.
Yeah. All of the above. Yes.
All right. So let's go around the horn and see what everybody's got coming up. Let's start with you, Mr. Criscolo. What do you got coming up here?
Thankfully, I believe I'm done for the rest of the week, which is nice. But next week on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we'll do the wrestling feed first. Next week, myself and my PIC, Mr. Zero, will be back for another episode of the Gold Standard, known as the Place to Be Podcast. The final show of 1989. It's actually a movie watch with a match included. So stay tuned and you'll see what I'm talking about. We'll also have a new episode of Place to Be Nation's main event next week as well. Here on the Pop Feed, I believe probably in the next, it comes out Friday. So probably sometime next week, you will see a Pop Goes the Movies for Rambo Last Blood. I believe myself and the doctor, Dr. G. George Bellino from, of course, Andy. Mm-hmm. The Year in Pop.
Awesome.
Anybody else who'd like to join us? Because that's his guy, Rambo. Behind, he's a sly guy, him and Rocky. So you'll probably see that soon.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So that's what we got coming up. And then we got Year in Pop, in a few weeks? So.
Yep. Early October, yep. 1978.
So. Yes.
And also we have a brand new Facebook page for Year in Pop. So we're looking mm-hmm. for participation feedback. So what we're going to do is we about a week or so before we're going to record each year, we're going to ask for anything, your favorite things from 1978, whether it be movies, music, TV, sports that you would like us to talk about or have memories of. Go to the Facebook page, like it on Facebook as well. So check that out. Russell, what do you got coming up, my friend?
Well, as I already mentioned on the show, we got a DC4U episode coming out this week, all about the Flash 1990 pilot episode that starred John Wesley Shipp for that very short-lived series. I believe that aired on CBS, and you can watch in its entirety on the DC Universe app. Last week, Todd and I did an episode on The Flash number 123, which was The Flash of Two Worlds, the first meeting of Barry Allen, the Silver Age Flash, with Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash. So it was the first of its kind. It was the first idea of two characters with the same name from different dimensions actually meeting each other and would explode into the whole multiverse idea that you see both Marvel and DC exploring ad nauseum at times. But really great issue. A lot of fun reading that one. It was my first time through it, in fact. So that'll wrap us up for Flash Month. And, of course, we'll be continuing on with this first season of DC4U, which is going to carry us all the way through November. And also, pretty soon we're going to be recording a new episode of the Marvel Age podcast. That's going to be continuing our exploration of 1972, which has been a very interesting year so far, as Tim can attest. There's a little night nursing going on in our next episode, which is all sorts of throbbing excitement, as it describes itself.
Wow. And you guys reading my books again?
Something like that.
Well, not like. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's probably not quite that interesting. I finished that issue already, and it was like, well, that was a thing. of course, stay tuned in December when my cohort Sam Neely and I will be back for our second season of 90 to Nothing. We're going to be kicking off an entire season looking at movies from the year 1990. We got quite a list that we've already started going through, and it's some really fun rewatches and some not so fun rewatches for at least one of us.
All right, cool. Tim, what do you got coming up besides aforementioned Marvel Age?
Yeah, aforementioned Marvel Age, second of three episodes devoted to 1972. We're going to be recording that episode later this month with Nick Duke and Todd Weber. 1972 in Marvel Comics, new characters, new concepts, new series, new genres even, new creators, so much stuff, jam-packed with all sorts of interesting things to talk about, if not necessarily always good things. So I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to reading whatever is on the list, which not for me to say, right? Beyond
quite
that,
frankly,
Scott Criscola mentions live watching a movie. I'm sure I wouldn't know anything about that.
No, Tim, Clueless.
Literally. Clueless on that front.
That's what we're watching. Clueless. No.
Clueless. And there we go.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
No, it's Scott Pilgrim. As a matter of fact.
Bastards.
Anyway, not to tell tales out of skew, yeah, stay tuned.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And that's it.
All right, Miranda, what do you got coming up?
So it is Geek and Sassy's birth anniversary. We've got that coming up.
Oh, your birth anniversary.
It's our birth anniversary.
Birth-a-sons? I don't know.
Birth anniversary. So we've been here for
birth anniversary.
Oh my God.
It's the geek-a-sance.
Yes, the geek-a-sance.
The sass-a-sance.
Oh, my God.
Why do you guys always do this to Miranda?
Arr! I'm going to like start recording with Jenny, and I'm going to be like, our birth of geek-a-sance and whatever the fuck Tim said.
Good Lord. What's this fuck shit joke?
Yeah.
All right.
What is it saying? Dear sweet baby Jesus.
Well, you've got our attention, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so it's our birth anniversary. So 3 years of hijinks and shenanigans and sassery going on. So we're going to have like a little special episode. And then we actually already have our episode after that scheduled and planned. And we're going to bring you our all-time favorite CW TV lineup to start you going into October.
Mm. All right, cool. All right, as for myself, by the time you hear this, there will be a new episode of Laugh In Theater. Mr. Jason Sherman joined me for a look at Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. It was a lot of fun. He's got some something coming up for E-Ticket Attraction that ties in, so which is why he picked that movie at this time. Also, I have more episodes of Laugh In Theater coming soon. I have Mr. David Sunday going to be joining me for So I Married an Axe Murderer, as well as Chad Campbell joining me for Superbad. So look forward to those coming up. I will also be joining Miss Jennifer Smith on Freak Out Drive-In. I'm not going to give away what the movie is, but check that out coming very soon. Also, like Scott said, new episode of Year in Pop coming in October, as well as another episode, a new episode of The Great Debate with three debuts, all brand new guests for the first time on The Great Debate. And then down the line, there are some new shows in the works, so stay tuned for that, as well as the horror month, right, Scott? We have a little tribute to horror coming for the month of October with all kinds of pods. Scott, for you guys, he's doing this. He's falling on the sword. He is rewatching all the classic Universal horror movies. So look forward to all that. The site's going to have a lot of written content. For the month of horror, and lots of new articles coming. We have a new piece called the Tuesday Top 10. Hopefully you'll see every week with a different list. This first edition will feature my top 10 movies of this summer, of movies I saw. So sorry, John Wick 3, you're not on there just because I didn't see you. And then lots of other great stuff coming to the site. The Greatest Song of the 80s tournament is coming down to the wire. So only a couple more weeks to get those votes in. Lots of some surprises, you know, but a lot of you know, songs we predicted were going to be there are still alive. So, you know, it's been interesting, the voting. I couldn't believe how passionate some people are about these, some of these songs, some of the comments we see on the Facebook page. There's a whole Duran Duran society out there that is pissed off right now that Maneater is losing to Ghostbusters in the regional semis. So regional quarterfinal, sorry, I believe. No, it's a great song. So Maneater is actually not one of my favorite Hall & Oates songs, but that's a sidebar. And at almost 1:30 in the morning, sidebars are not allowed. So I want to thank everybody for being on this show. Once again, thank you all for participating in the Summer Movie Wager. I really appreciate it. I had a lot of fun checking out all summer, keeping track, having vested interest, so to speak, in it. So I want to thank you guys for Mr. Scott Criscolo, Mr. Tim Cable, Mr. Russell Sellers, and Ms. Miranda Berthos, and Ms. Jenny Smith, who unfortunately couldn't join us tonight due to an illness, but she'll be back playing along with us, and she'll be on the Scott Pilgrim Live Watch, hopefully. I'm Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us and looking forward to looking back, and we will see you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.
I want to do a movie called Into the Cable Sant.
The
capel sauce has begun.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
What about the Miranda sauce?
No.
The Russell sauce? The Criscola sauce.
Okay. Fucking okay.
Oh God.